Thank you, Mr. Gerber. Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the annual meeting of the Board of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin to order. It is 12:11 on Thursday, March the 25th, 2021. I would like to call the roll. Commissioner Ritchie, Commissioner Bailey, Commissioner Duncan Hall.
Present.
Commissioner Apostola.
Present.
And Commissioner Carrington. Present. So we do have a quorum with three commissioners present. Next item on our agenda is citizen communication. Do we have anyone who has signed up for citizen communication? I see Nydia shaking her head, so no, we don't have anyone signing up for citizen communication. As I've opened the HACA board meeting, I also need to open the other meetings that we will have today. I'd like to open the meeting of Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, the meeting of Austin Affordable PFC, and then the agenda for the Austin, for the South Congress PFC. So opening all meetings of items that we will be addressing today. Next item on the agenda is the consent items. You have minutes of February the 18th, 2021, and you also have a resolution of 02695, which relates to all actions that have previously been taken by this board. So do I have a motion to approve the two items on the consent agenda?
I so move.
Commissioner Apostolo makes the motion. Commissioner Duncan Hall, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next item on our agenda is item number three, which is an update on HACA's actions related to COVID-19 and update on HACA's resident and client support center. Mr. Gerber.
Pilar Sanchez and Leilani Villas-Lim will give the report.
Okay. Good afternoon, commissioners and staff. The client and support center was very active in February. At the beginning of the month, called about 650 elderly to remind them of the testing, the COVID testing that's happening. And then at the end of the month, they called them again, another 650, to remind them about the vaccinations that were happening at their sites. So a lot of outbound calls. They were also very helpful. During the winter storm, they took a lot of calls, and they also made a lot of outbound calls to let resident leaders and property managers know when food was going to be delivered at that property. I'm happy to say that over 17,000 hot meals were delivered to our residents during the storm. We worked very closely with the City of Austin and the Travis County Emergency Center and a group called Good Work Austin, who helped coordinate those deliveries with a multitude of restaurants. We continue to have the Boys and Girls Club at Meadowbrook and BTW and Chalmers. They serve about 20 to 25 kids a day. And as you recall, we added BTW as a response to COVID. CIS continues to provide services to the families and the kids at their sites. The Bringing Health Home program has been very active. Like I said earlier, they coordinated a company to come through our properties and conduct testing, COVID testing for our residents. And they are able to request consent to release their results to HACA so that we can assist anyone that tests positive through our Bringing Health Home program. They also, with Mike and Sylvia, prompting the Austin Public Health, very strongly, continuously calling them, the Bringing Health Home team coordinated vaccinations to happen at our elderly sites as well. So several residents and some staff were vaccinated back in February, and we're preparing to give second doses in April. We are also continuing to administer the rent program as a response to COVID. which provides rental assistance to Austin renters throughout the city, not just our participants. The good news is that this time around, our participants are eligible for this assistance. They'll be eligible for the portion that the tenant pays. And Michael Roth already has all his properties registered to help with their residents. And we sent over 2,000 emails to Lisa's participants as well to let them know about the program. And we also sent an email blast to SHCC's Austin properties that they're aware of the program. We have over 5,000 applications submitted by renters, and over 1,000 property owner representatives have registered as well. So it's been a very successful launch. And lastly, we received $20,000 from the Austin, from the Anderson Foundation for a roving service coordinator to, as a result, to address COVID. So we're happy for that last grant that we just received.
Thanks, Pilar. I don't know if Leilani, do you want to add anything to that report?
Maybe to add another good news is we also received another grant for $20,000 from our partners from SACVA Mattress. They will be sponsoring our youth internship program this year. So we're very, very excited. It launched this week. We have 15 Hakka youth who will be providing, they'll be providing leadership and internship opportunities with our community partners. So that's on top of the Anderson Foundation. We got that news very recently. So 40,000 total. So we're very pleased with our partnership and basically the good work that Austin Pathway staff have been doing so far. Thank you.
No one needs that My Pillow guy, right?
Leilani, how did we get our relationship with SACVA Mattress? I just bought one.
Oh, you did! Oh, lucky you! We have luxury mattresses, right? So they're luxury mattresses. About a couple of years ago, if you remember, their CEO Ken flew in from New York City. They contacted me saying, "How can we help?" They just said they saw something about Austin Pathways, and they contacted me. And I said, "You know how you can help? We need beds for our residents because we have a bed bug issue and we have health issues." So that's kind of like how the conversation started. During that time, they had this wonderful event called Start Up Games, and it's an event for nonprofit organizations in Austin, and they invited the Housing Authority to join in these games. And they're games like they had ping pong, and you raise funds during those games. So myself and Murphy Rowland actually was invited as their SACVA guests of honor, and we played ping pong and cornhole, and they raised about $20,000 initially. The funds that they raised at that time, they gave $15,000 to Hakka plus 100 luxury beds to our residents. So we are their nonprofit of choice. And so whenever family elder care or any of our residents need a bed, they have set aside 100 beds, and every household can get up to 2 beds. And they're about retail value about $900 a piece plus tax. And when they deliver it, they deliver the mattress plus the box spring and frame. Through the Amplify Austin campaign, we've increased and gotten a lot more involved with SACVA Mattress. And I asked them, we'd like for you to be our long-term partner as your nonprofit of choice. And through that, I was able to request another $20,000 and introduce them to the youth internship program. And it's been a wonderful relationship. Every time I ask, they seem to say yes. They haven't said no yet. So we're very, very grateful. We are the first nonprofit that they have sponsored at this level. And so we're learning as we go, but it's been a wonderful relationship so far. And this is our second year with SACVA.
Congratulations. Congratulations. And if you need a testimonial, call me up.
I sure will. I sure will, Commissioner. You bet.
Mike.
The commissioners, I think Barbara would like to present really quickly on our use of paraeducators as part of the COVID response. So, Barbara?
Hello, commissioners. Good afternoon. I have an update that we have successfully trained and certified 24 residents as paraeducators.
Okay.
And 31 residents have completed the technology training. and they are continually training. They did the mental health first aid training and also a series of soft skills trainings that we have online. We completed over 50 certifications for the paraeducators, and they have started working with their family and friends that are residents in the paraeducator role as we're bringing on a coordinator, a contracted position to oversee their work with other residents. And we've also taken referrals through the survey that Catherine's team is doing online on, in terms of technology needs, to refer families that need assistance there. So we've been helping those families as well.
That's great.
Thank you very much, Barbara. Commissioners, are there any other questions related to the COVID report?
Well, I'm curious, Barbara, the age group of these paraeducators.
Good question.
I'm sure. Do you have that kind of demographics for us?
Did you ask the ages?
Yeah, age group range, age range.
Right. So they're all except two of them are parents. And most of them are parents of middle to high school students, so I would say the age range is about 30 to 50. We do have a few single individuals that are in the pool, but that's the general age range.
Excellent. Good.
Anything else, Mr. Gerber, on the Resident Client Support Center?
No, ma'am. I think we can move on to the next item.
Okay. Agenda item number 4 is the update on impact to the Housing Authority for properties resulting from the February 2021 winter storm.
Commissioners, as you know, and I know Commissioner Apostola knows all too well, actually, I think all three of you know all too well the impacts of the winter storm. We initially thought that we had been spared really kind of the worst of it, and really hats off to our property management teams and Jimmy Teasdale and others getting out there, you know, working that weekend and into the early in the next week, really quickly addressing, you know, emergent issues. But as things progressed, we thought that we were initially, you know, having, you know, $300,000 to $400,000 worth of damage. And we're now finding that the damage was in fact a little bit more extensive, and probably is about double that estimate. Because we were hitting, you know, such a high number, we thought that it was important to give you all just a quick briefing. Nothing that we can't handle, but just wanted to give you a quick briefing that we did sustain, like our neighbors, more damage than we thought. And there's some remediation and other work that's going to go a little bit longer term, longer than we thought. It's not just as many patches as we might have wished that we could just sort of deal with in a week or two's time, but some repairs are going to need to take place over the next several months. So Michael Roth and will lead our presentation, and Mike, I'll turn it over to you.
Good afternoon, commissioners, and thank you for the opportunity to share this information with you. Andrea, if you could move ahead to slide number 3. We're going to jump ahead and just give some overall details and numbers on the actual damage that was sustained during the storm, during the week of the storm. Slide before that, Andrea. Initially, every property did lose either power, water, heat, or some combination of that. And we found that about 121 units actually had broken water pipes or some level of water damage to them. In addition to that, there were 80 units that had water shut off in order for us to be able to address the damage in those other 120 units. So when we would have a building that had water tied to 2, 3, or 4 units, we had to turn the water off to all of them in order to fix the one or two that maybe had some damage, in addition to the times when the city actually had the water shut off as well. On top of that, we also had 3 community rooms at properties at BTW, Georgian, and Golden Oaks that had some damage caused by broken water pipes in the maintenance shop areas or in the community room areas. Next slide. All of our properties, the vast majority of them, had issues with some small tree limbs, which was pretty minor, But we did have at Northgate, one of our properties that had a larger issue with the larger tree limbs that required professionals to come in and actually do the removal and take down of several trees and several tree limbs. In addition to that, we saw some damage to some of our systems. Best in place, our backup generators ultimately failed over time, and we're still working to get those repaired and restored back to order, which was significant because that had an impact on the elevator systems and maintaining the safety levels for all residents at that property. At North Loop, and I might ask Jimmy Teasdale just to chime in here at North Loop and talk a little bit about the system damage. Damage to the elevators, to the boiler system, the chillers, the fire suppression system, and even to the awning from the fallen icicles right in front of the building. So, Jimmy, if you could just touch a little bit on some of the damage and the volume of the damage at the North Loop systems.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for letting me join you today. Well, over at North Loop, most of the damage occurred when the fire suppression sprinkler system burst in several locations throughout the building. That fire suppression loop runs through the mechanical room and at the back of the building on the first floor, and it's uninsulated back there. And it got so cold back in that mechanical room, more or less open to the open outside air, that it did break in several locations. And regarding the mechanical room itself, the chiller and the boiler in there were sprayed with, you know, water for some time that froze a number of temperature gauges and other equipment that we have in there. And regarding the elevators themselves weren't damaged, but water did pour down inside of the control panel that we have back in a special room off of the back of the building there, and did cause some issues in there. We had to change out the oil, and we're still working a little bit back in that room to take the control panel off the wall, remove some sheetrock, replace it, and put the control panel back on. So that's still going on. All the fire loop system was repaired and put back together. The chiller and the boiler were all repaired. We're putting the new temperature gauges on actually today. The awning suffered an impact damage from a large icicle, several feet long, that fell from the building and hit the top of the awning and dented it. And we've already got that bid in process of replacement now. So everything's back online. Everything's going well over there. The gas and generators all back online. All that has been corrected and repaired. And we're just going through the other sites now for unit repairs generally. I hope I answered those questions right, Michael.
Thanks, Jimmy. Andrew, if you can move on to the next slide. Slide before. Okay. We do have some pictures of the actual damage here. This is some of the damage at Georgian, where you can see where the water was coming in actually through the ceiling, and as a result of the pipe burst there, the ceiling panels actually came down inside the unit and created quite a bit of damage. Some next pictures you can see in the next slide. At Coronado Hills, we had some damage. You can see standing water on the picture on the left, which ultimately resulted in tile damage to the flooring, which will cause us to have to do some major floor repairs at Coronado Hills. Next picture. In Meadowbrook, you can see them, the first picture, they're squeegeeing the water out of the unit. And what we see there on the right is what we had to do at many of the properties is actually break in through the brick in the back of the building to actually access the pipes in order to be able to make the repair to the broken pipes. And then at North Loop, the next picture, you see some of the drywall that had to be taken off the wall in order to allow the walls to dry out so that we don't end up with any mold issues long-term at any in those locations. And we had to do that at several places, at Meadowbrook, at North Loop, at Georgian, a number of properties where we had to actually remove the drywall. And this is where we were getting around to the phase two that Mike was talking about before, Mr. Gerber was talking about before, that we do need to, it ends up being a little bit more expensive and a little bit more work than we originally thought was going to be involved with that. And so if we go on to the next slide, you can see that those initial repairs in that first couple days of the storm, we were able to get around to abate all of those broken water pipes, repair all the damage to the water heaters, and complete all the water extraction as best we could. And we had those systems back up and running, and we had residents back with water, gas, heat, electric, and everything functioning. But as we're seeing now, after the insurance adjusters come through, there are these ongoing repairs to the water damage, the drywall that has to be replaced, ceilings that have to be replaced, flooring in a number of units that have to be replaced, masonry repairs, as we saw in some of the pictures. And then what we're finding in the two properties in particular, at Meadowbrook and at Coronado Hills, we're going to have to do some additional asbestos abatement in order to be able to make those repairs to the drywall and to the flooring. Next slide, Andrea. So when we look at our entire portfolio, there were about seven properties on the right that had little or no damage. And I know Chalmers did sustain some damage. In particular, Chalmers East had quite a bit of damage. And I know Chalmers South, but I'm really focusing on Chalmers West, where the damage was less there. And many of the units that actually had the most damage were units that were already vacated with no residents living in them. And so it made it easier for us to move forward there. The rest of those properties there, Santa Rita, Salina, Gaston, Northgate, Menchaca 2, Menchaca Village, had damage that was fairly minor and minor enough that we will not be submitting insurance claims on these properties. And the damage was less than what the deductible would have been with those properties. However, on the left, you see the list of properties that did sustain damage. And the four that I highlighted there in red are the ones that sustained the greatest level of damage. We're seeing that at Meadowbrook, there are about 25 units in which we're going to have to do some major work and major repairs. Coronado Hills, we have 22 of the 48 units that sustained water damage, and 11 of them will require floor replacements. At Georgian, we had almost 15 units that had major damage, some of the ceiling work that you saw coming down in those first two pictures, and also masonry work there. And, of course, Northloop, where we referenced the systems damage and repairs to the chiller and boiler and elevators, et cetera. Next slide. Some of this work is going to require relocation of residents, in particular at Coronado Hills and at Meadowbrook. In order to replace the flooring of those 11 units at Coronado Hills, that will require an asbestos abatement, and residents cannot be safely living inside the unit while we're doing an asbestos abatement. And so for those 11 households, they will have to move out temporarily, about 7 to 10 days, while we do that replacement, and then they'll be able to return to their apartments. To date, we're completed with two and about to finish the next three within the next couple of days. So we're pretty close to being halfway through the 11 units there at Coronado Hills. And we expect it'll take several more weeks to get that project finished. At Meadowbrook, the damage was, like I said, more extensive and not immediately as obvious and apparent as it was at Coronado Hills. At Meadowbrook, the damage was primarily in the walls and the moisture in the walls being trapped there. And of course, removing 2 to 4 feet of drywall in many of those apartments also involves asbestos abatement because there's asbestos in that drywall. And so for those units as well, we will have to move residents out of the unit in order to do that work of repairing the drywall and replacing it and getting them back in. To date, we have completed the abatement on two of those units, and we'll be continuing to speed up that process to get that work done as quickly as we can. Next slide. And after that is also now the continuing ongoing work of reporting and insurance claims and inspections. You know, we continue to have regular conversations with HUD, with TDHCA, with our lenders and investors for questions about each of these properties. We will be filing 10 properties. We'll be submitting insurance claims to recoup the damage, the relocation costs, and lost rent for those units where we have to do some relocation. And finally, we're getting inspection requests already from our lenders and investors. So what I created the slide. We had 5 lender inspections requested. We just got a 6th one as well. And 3 of those inspections are going to happen already next week. So that'll be an ongoing process throughout this as well. Okay. I'm going to stop there. The last 2 slides we have, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the food distribution and water distribution. But I wanted to see if there were any questions that anyone had about the actual damage to the units and the repair process that's underway.
Any of the commissioners have questions?
I have one. Where are the tenants or residents being relocated to? Other properties or hotels or what?
So it is a combination. We're working with each family individually, and many of them will be staying in a hotel for that 7 to 10 day time period for the repair. Some of them have chosen to go and stay with other family members or friends, but the majority of them will be staying in hotels. And we are providing, paying for that, of course, as well as paying for all the moving costs to move the belongings out of the unit while that work is being done as well, and then moving it back once everything is finished and repaired. There are a couple of families where we had the opportunity, because we had other vacant units on those properties, where those families will just move into another unit at that property. But, so it's a combination of all 3 of those options.
Okay. Thank you.
Any more questions for Michael? Okay, Michael, moving along then.
So the last two slides, I'd invite.
Oh, go ahead, Michael.
I was just going to invite Leilani or Catherine to share information about the water, food and water delivery in the last 2 slides.
Good afternoon, commissioners. This is Catherine Crago. To ensure that residents could stay at home and stay healthy and stabilize their families as utilities were coming online and as they were scrambling to meet new needs from social service providers, Austin Pathways and HACA helped ensure that residents at 17 properties received clean drinking water and food, including initially in the aftermath emergency self-serve water, and then followed by a 7 to 10 day supply of clean drinking water for each family member in the household, and about 18,000 single hot meals and about 150 dry food boxes. As Pilar said earlier, we coordinated this through Good Work Austin and World Central Kitchen, and all together worked with about 31 local farm-to-table restaurants, Travis County Emergency Operations Center, and local nonprofits like Austin Mutual Aid Network and the Community Resilience Trust. All told, our teams worked to secure about $122,000 in in-kind supplies and services from those organizations.
It was very impressive, and I think that Michael Roth and I still have flashbacks to being at Manor, and after we had delivered, literally, how many units are at that property, Michael? 94?
Correct, 94.
94, and we had delivered 300 Indian food meals. Then we had delivered, there had been deliveries of Hat Creek hamburgers. Then 8 pallet loads of water, showed up, which was 2,500 bottles of water. That arrived thanks to our team's amazing efforts. And I still remember the kid who showed up. He said, "Could I have a case of water for me and my grandmother?" And Michael Roth and I both looked at each other like, take 10. Really, it takes. There is no shortage of water
in that
property or at any of our properties. And the outreach that was done was incredible. Community response was phenomenal, and our team's effort to coordinate was phenomenal. And our residents who stepped up. I know Commissioner Apostolo, I know you had a hand in helping to distribute meals and supplies. Lupe Garcia, who is our new head of our citywide advisory board, she's the council president at Santa Rita. She basically set up a little grocery store that had, you know, Kodiak oatmeal and, you know, Barilla pasta and a range of really nutritious food. And so, you know, we saw that all over the place. And so it was really an amazing time of people coming together in great hardship. I know Catherine's got a list of the meals served, and I've got a bigger thing that you'll be able to see, so you'll, other than just on the slide here, the same thing printed out for y'all. But to just see the range of restaurants that stepped up to help. So we're so grateful for that partnership. And then at the end of today's session, we'll show you a video that that we did that actually shows you pictures, because it's nice to, you know, see it on in charts, but it's better to see the faces of the residents and the work that got done. It's just a real testament to the team. So thank you for all your work, gang. I appreciate it. Michael, anything else you want to share on this item?
Or if I can just chime in very quickly, Mr. Gerber, I just want to emphasize that while we are awaiting the completion of the repairs needed on the remaining units, and we are going through some of this temporary relocation effort at two of these properties, I just want to assure you that we are keeping very close tabs on the condition of the units that the families are in, so that they do remain habitable. But if at any point during this time that we are awaiting these repairs to be completed, that it does appear that conditions deteriorate, we will accelerate the temporary relocation for those residents to ensure that they continue to stay in safe living environments. So I just wanted to assure you all of that.
Excellent. And Jimmy Teasdale, are we correct in representing to the board that the cost of the damages will not exceed, certainly not exceed $1 million, but we are talking around $800,000 as it stands now?
I think that's pretty accurate right now as it stands, and we may be able to bring that down. We've been scrubbing the insurance takeoff scopes and reducing a little bit of work here and there just in the past couple hours with my staff here. We're just coming up with ways to expedite the work. I think we're going to finish a little earlier than we thought, and we're going to finish for a little less than we thought. Now, at the same time, there's one caveat to that, is that even now, sites are calling in with new discoveries. So as we turn on exterior water systems and irrigation systems, we're finding some broken pipes and things like that that aren't impacting residents, luckily, but may add some small ticks to the overall scope of repairs everywhere. But I think it's safe to say, I certainly hope, I don't think we're going to hit $1 million. Got a little worried about it a few weeks ago, but it's looking better now.
Great. Thanks to, again, everyone for their leadership. And I think that may be a good place, Commissioner Carrington, to turn to item number 5, which is a request for us to review our budget and get board approval for our budget next year. Luckily, we have the resources and the agency to deal with these expenses, but this will we'd like to present the full agency budget picture for FY21-22 to you in item 5. If we can move on.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. I would like to, going back to item 4 for just a minute, I did join in on some of the calls that senior staff was having of the activities that were going on over that week, and it was very impressive with the way the staff came together with the leadership, not only at the top, but also leadership in the other areas of the housing authority. So I say job well done. So thank you all. And as Mr. Gerber says, we are ready to move on to item 5, which is the discussion, possible action regarding resolution 02696, which is the operating budget for 21-22. Our budget year begins April 1 of 2021, ends March 31 of 2022. And I would like to welcome or invite Barbara Chen, our Chief Financial Officer, to do this presentation. And I would like to say welcome, Barbara.
Thank you.
We're very, very glad to have you.
I'm very, very glad I'm here.
Okay. Take it away.
Barbara, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
Cheers.
Sure. Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody, commissioners and Mr. Gerber and the colleagues. Here in the budget, you all have, including the ball package, you all have the proposed budget for fiscal year 2022. So I'm going to do a very kind of very high level, just to highlight a few that from the budget. So can you go to the second page? This is just a kind of a summary, a very high, like I said, highlight. It refers to the Schedule 1, page 3 in the board package. So basically just summary to show you that, first of all, I want to say this, that from what I see that working on the budget, I want to make, to share with you, this is what I see, that HOCHTIEF's financial position is very strong, very healthy. So I think we should be very, very proud of ourselves. That's accumulated effort for over the years. It doesn't happen in one day. I just want to make sure that I kind of share that with you. The HOCHTIEF's financial position is strong and healthy. Okay, let's go back to the 2022's budget. Like I said, this is summarized from the Schedule 1, page 3 on the budget, in the full package. So I'm sorry, can we go back to the previous slide? Okay, not the previous one. Yeah, I'm sorry. So this year in the budget, we proposed operating revenue of $612,906,969. That including all our HUD payment, all our MFN, so and all other developer fee, management fee all together. And our proposed operating budget is $607,056,361. That's including all our employee, administrative salary, employees, benefit, and any of the administrative expenses, maintenance expenses, and the expenses, everything all together. And we also asked for the approval for a provision for our debt service for our principal payment in fiscal year 2021-22 of $931,226. Another provision that we proposed as a board approval and is required by HUD that we set aside the $604,081 as a replacement reserve for all our red properties. After all that, we have about net reserve of $4,315,301. I want to add another, in practice, we have been budgeted 9 months of MFE, management fees revenue for our SHCC. We continue the practice from the previous years. We budget the revenue for 9 months, but we budget 12 months operating expenses for our SHCC program, entities. Okay, can we go to the next slide?
Barbara, if I could just interject there, that's been a practice we've done now for probably 6 or 7 years, just because of uncertainty about the contracts. Mm-hmm. And because we don't have a guarantee that we're going to have them for the full year, we're going to be conservative and only book 9 months worth of revenue, but the full year's worth of expenses. So all the staff salaries and everything administrative is covered, but in terms of the fees that we'll get from HUD, that'll only be 9 months worth. So we'll come back to you all in a budget amendment later in the year once we have that certainty, and we'll anticipate booking that revenue. And the good news is everything will be paid already. So that will just go to our bottom line, which is good.
Okay.
Barbara.
No, thank you to add all those explanations. The next few slides, I'm basically just kind of show the commissioner where our funding are from. The majority of our funding are from the federal government HUD program, from their HUD programs and the contracts. That pretty much into three categories, three different department programs. The first one is our Federal Rental Assistance Demonstration Program, that which we receive HUD payment, and we also charge tenants rent now from the tenant's rent income. that this is the previous public housing property programs, as you know. And the next one is from the Federal Housing Choice Voucher Program. Now, I need to go back. Okay. That's the Section 8 program that which we receive the HUD payments, and we also earn admin fees. And this is provided, funded by HUD. The next one is our federal performance-based contract administrators, that which is our SHCC. That we also receive the revenue for HUD payment. Also, we earn the fees, management fee, the MOR fees, all those. So the total proposed 2022, the total budget that we funded by HUD is $568.3 million. Can we go to the next page? So we also have some other non-federal, non-HUD program or grant that we received. The biggest one is, the first one is our Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, that AHC. That this department that we have a rental income from our various property, we also earn the management and developer fees. Then the next one is our tenant-based rental assistance program, which is the TBIA, is from the state, funded by the state. You are going to see on the very bottom, you are going to see the budget is about $1 million this year. Then the next one is our Austin Pathway. The Austin Pathway also received some grant, about $950,000 in grant revenue. Also, the Austin Pathway that received a donation transfer from the SHCC, that about $4.2 million to cover all the staff, the administrative costs, and all the programs through the under the Austin Pathway. We also received some other miscellaneous incomes. So that's just kind of some miscellaneous incomes items. So the total all non-HUD program, the revenue from non-HUD program, we proposed about $44.6 million. That basically just, I break it down into the different category, rental revenue $15.3 million and the other revenue of $14.1 million. And the donation is $14.2 million. That's the donation from our SHCC program and the AHC to cover the Austin Pathway and the COCC's operating costs. Next slide, please. And this one is just kind of give you a picture. I like pictures, so myself. This is one just show you that the overall, just kind of show you that about 93% of our funding sources from the federal HUD departments. So that about 7% of our revenue is from non-HUD program. But the biggest, the 93, we all know that majority of the funding is for our HUB payment, HUB revenue for the SHCC and our assistant housing programs. Next slide, please. How we use the funding we receive from HUD, not HUB programs. Basically, the HUB housing assistant payments we receive funds, received from HUD is HACC, the HUDCA's largest single funding sources to provide housing assistance payment to family in the city of Austin and the state of Texas and Arkansas. This kind of payment revenue is a pass-through program. So as that means that all the revenue we receive, all the funding provided by HUD, is we use it to pay for the rent housing assistance payment for on behalf of our tenants to the landlords. So the estimated revenue from HUD is about $542.8 million. It breaks it down to the two different programs. SHCC's HUD revenue is $477.6 million. The assistant housing HUB revenue, which is our Section 8 program, is $65.2 million. Then again, like I say, it's a pass through, so we spend an equal amount of in our hub expenses. Next slide, please.
So I would just add, I think it's important to note on that slide. So those are two of our biggest divisions. So Southwest Housing Compliance, which has project-based Section 8, you know, the subsidy goes to the property, to the apartment unit. That's what Southwest Housing is administering. And it's, you know, a huge amount of money going through our books. And it's for properties all throughout the state of Texas and Arkansas. Lisa Garcia's program, the one that she leads in assisted housing, her funding comes, and that's of course tenant-based. Mm-hmm. And so that's the other $65.2 million that's wrapped up there. But I think it's important to make that distinction between those programs. But yes, it is through a housing assistance payment, that the money is received from HUD to HACA and is our largest single source of funding. Did I say that correctly, Barbara?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, next slide.
The next slide is just kind of, again, it's kind of summarized from the Schedule 1, page 3, from the expenses side. So basically, how we use the non-hub revenue, that basically we use the non-hub revenue to cover the agency-wide, the administrative and maintenance and tenant service and any other general expenses. In the fiscal year 2022, we project an estimate of net income of $5.9 million. And you can see that we all, after the net income, we also propose about $1.5 million provision to cover the debt service and to allocate to fund the replacement reserve for our REIT property. So then again, the net income that for reserve is going to be $4.3 million. Again and again, HACA's financial position is very strong, and right now we carry about an average of $22 million in unrestricted reserve cash for ongoing operations. Based on this number, based on the reserve we have in our bank account, it's going to be sustained enough to support the 6 months, about 6 months of operation without any revenue at all. So this is a very strong, very healthy position we are in. So the next is that basically I just kind of spread the highlight and outline the different type of operating expenses other than hub payments. So we have, like I say, we have administrative expenses that including our employee salary expenses, training, travel, and auditing fee, and the management fee. And also including that you probably see legal expenses. So you can see that we did increase our legal expenses budget by $150,000. So it's related to to renew, to bid on the SHCC contracts. So the maintenance expenses, including the maintenance labor cost, the material contract is overall about $5.72 million. Tenant service, including all the contracts and expenses in order to help our residents, such as our elderly care program, the Boys and Girls Club, all those stuff probably around overall about $3.15 million. This is just for the direct cost for those the programs. That doesn't include the employee, the employee salary expenses. Okay. The other general expenses that including our employee benefit, the property tax, any utility, insurance, those type of expenses of about $31 million. That we have a provision for debt, the principal and the replacement reserve of $1.54 million. Net reserve is $4.3 million. Okay, next slide. I just want to ask so far, Commissioner, do you have any questions so far? No. Okay, I have this kind of highlight from a major program or department, four of them, that just kind of kind of want to let you take a look at the asking pathway, that which is that that's on the on our slide, page number 9. And that's the asking. You are going to see, find the information on slides now, on the page number 9 and the slide 5. And the Assistant Housing Department, that's our Section 8 program, is on the Schedule 1C and the number 6. And the Southwest Housing SHCC comparison or cooperation, that's SHCC. And the last one is asking affordable housing corporations is the AHC is on the page number 7. So it just kind of highlight and just kind of make, provide you a highlight, a summary, you know, information for those programs. Can we go to the next? And I'm, again, I'm going to go into a little bit details, and thanks for the BBs that they provide me the information. It's some new and lots of information, and I thank for all their assistance in, to prepare, put this presentation together. The asking pathway that, as you see, that we, the total proposed expenses for the year is $4.46 million. The total revenue is $5.1 million, including $4.15 million donation from the SHCC program. Then the next, that's the first column, the consolidated column. The next, the break it down to the various different programs, that including our community development, the digital inclusion, and the bring health home, the family self-sufficiency. So you can see the detail, the summary, and all the detail by the different departments of the asking pathways. The second half, the bottom half of the kind of highlight a few the large tenant service expenses that you can see it. And if you want to see the detail, it's going to be from page, you know, starting from page 20 on the budget, okay, in the budget package. So if you have any question or any question, no, you will see the detail is on starting from page 20. The next, please.
And Barbara, if I could just interject there, as I think I've represented to each of the board members, I know you all care very deeply about the services that we provide to our residents. All of the funding for our services that we've included in the past is carried forward and included again in this year's budget. So there's been no cuts that have been made. The communities and schools contract is fully intact and fully funded. The Boys and Girls Club contract is fully intact and funded. Creative Action is fully intact and funded, as are all of our family elder care and other programs. Many programs are in fact growing. And so and I'll give you an example. At the direction of this board, because of concerns about both summer slide and the COVID slide, you know, we have proposed in the budget an additional $250,000 that would be used just this year, 1 year funding, for summer activities for this coming summer that starts in, you know, 10 weeks. So we're so that is represented in there at the $250,000 level. You will also notice if you actually go through the budget, and I think I shared this with some of you, the money that you all allocated already for buying computers, the $300,000 for computer services, that didn't get fully expended, hasn't been fully expended yet. So you'll see part of the money that's been expended reflected in the total current budget, but then we carry forward the balance into next year. So, because we're crossing two budget years. So, by way of an example, digital inclusion money, you know, we spent $174,000 for the at-home learning program, but we have an additional $139,000 that is in there that will be carried into this current budget. You'll see that as requested. It's important to note that that's one-time funding. We're really responding to the pandemic. And we'll do, after the pandemic ends and after AISD is fully operational, an assessment working with them of, you know, how can we best affect our students? How can we best help people get back into the workforce? How can we best help people with, I mean, all of our healthcare programming is now centered on getting people vaccinated. You know, so there will be a day post COVID-19 coming soon God willing. And so we will do that evaluation and report back to this board about that. Pilar, did I miss anything on that? Is that a correct? Everything is fully funded, and we're Austin Pathways is ready to rock and roll for this coming year.
That's right. Yeah, it's really it's very generous of the HACA board and Mr. Gerber to donate $4.155 million to this department and to our efforts. I don't think any other housing authority does anything near to what we do. So thank you for that.
Okay,
Barbara.
Okay, the next one we are going to go a little bit detail about our assisted housing, that our HCB our Section 8 programs. That in this year's budget, we propose the budget of $4.8 million in the administrative fees that that we earned from various programs. That you, as you can see, that all the details from all the different programs in the our Section 8 programs. The next slide is HUD payments. This is also that we totally proposed $65.19 million in HUD revenue. Again, it's from the different programs that, okay, the total revenue for our HCVP, for our Section 8 assisted housing program is $70,021,222. Next slide. Please.
Let me stop it at this point, if we can, Barbara. So I think it's important to note on that slide that the amount of money we receive in HAP payments, the actual payments that go to the landlord to cover the rent, that's different than the administrative fee that we receive as an agency to actually run the program. They come in as two separate items, or a series of separate items. And so the amount of money that HUD and Congress has historically appropriated to run the program has been generally far lower than what numerous studies have said is really needed to run the program. So we're always sort of struggling to meet the administrative demands of the program, knowing that we're short funded by Congress. And Lisa does a very admirable job of making sure that we hit all of our marks. But I think it's important to note that they're two separate items, the actual money to help the people, and then the actual money that HACA uses to go and for administration of the program. In that same vein, I would just say, going back to that last slide, Andrea, I would just say that we are also anticipating a lot of additional resources coming to our agency and to public housing authorities around the country for in the form of voucher assistance. This is going to be a major, we're anticipating the need to expend dollars quickly, and we don't have detailed information about that yet, but we've already been advised by HUD that we should be anticipating probably the issuance of as many as 75 to 100 vouchers per month for the next several months, which will get through our wait list probably pretty quickly over the next year. We may have to reopen our wait list later this year. But Lisa has been, in fact, we held the first meeting this morning of a planning committee, because when we have big projects here, we organize weekly planning meetings. And Lisa convened the first one today to bring together all the different disciplines, finance, admissions, me and Sylvia and others, to try to think about how we map out getting those vouchers issued to people in our community and to be ready for the influx of money coming in. So we'll need to report back to the board on that, but know that this money may be, in fact, a low watermark. We may see some pretty significant increases in funding for a variety of voucher programs. And I'd like to ask Lisa if you'd want to add. I know it may have stolen some of your thunder, but anything you'd want to add? I know you're right in the thick of all of it.
No, thank you, Mike. I would just say that, you know, like Mike said, with the current funding looking pretty good this year for 2021, just for the regular voucher program. So we're going to be able to issue about 75 vouchers a month. and we're getting prepared for the additional both emergency vouchers that should be released and announced probably in, they have to announce it by May. And there's also going to be some stability vouchers available. All the vouchers, the stability vouchers are going to be to serve, you know, the homeless, the chronically homeless, and those will, whatever ones that we get will go to our baseline. Overall, nationally, there's $43 million available on a national level. The emergency vouchers, there's $5 billion available nationally, and that's through the American Rescue Plan. So that's a significant amount of money. I don't know what our allocation will be. It's probably going to be some kind of formula allocation. NARAL's not aware of how that's going to be distributed yet. Those vouchers, the emergency vouchers, will sunset, meaning in 2023. That doesn't mean they'll go away. It just means HUD won't, if someone leaves that has a voucher with the emergency vouchers on September 30, 2023 and is off the program, you can't, they won't give you funding to replace it. So there is going to be a significant amount of additional funding coming our way. So we'll be ready to move forward to issue out the vouchers as soon as we can. But it's going to be a big year to issue vouchers in the community. And the, one of the things, and I'll be speaking on a couple agenda items later, the importance with this is really trying to locate additional units. Because vouchers are great, but people need to find affordable units to utilize the vouchers, and that's super key. And so the work of Austin Affordable Housing that they're doing, and then some strategies that I think we're going to have to put in place, a project-based, some tenant-based vouchers will help with the creation of additional affordable units. I'll stop there. Thank you.
This seems...
Lisa?
Yeah?
Question, Lisa? Can we go into the ETJ, extraterritorial jurisdiction, for utilization of our vouchers?
Yes, we can.
Thank you.
And we can go into, we have contract with a variety of other communities as well to be able to go to give pretty expanded choice, don't we, Lisa?
Yeah. Right now, we need to refresh our interlocal agreement. We had one, and we need to probably refresh it with Travis County, and we go into Travis County as well as Williamson County with Round Rock, and we go into those areas right now, and we inspect in those areas. Tyra, you had a question?
Yeah. It seems as if we have a very happy problem here, and for once, it might be a very happy way of having this, coming up with the solution to these problems. But one thing, can we use any of our future construction of units and provide perhaps more of those units for vouchers?
Definitely for all of the Austin affordable new construction, as well as any, I know we're project basing some vouchers at Chalmers East and future Chalmers West. And that we work closely with Austin Affordable to actively market any new units that come available as soon as they come available. So Nancy Green, his landlord outreach specialist in my area, works with Suzanne and Ron's area, and they really coordinate those efforts to make sure we advertise and market those units as soon as they become available.
Okay. Well, that certainly seems to be one of the avenues we can take to make sure that people get placed.
Yes, it's been a tremendous help, and that's helped us to be definitely more successful, or actually families to be more successful in locating units with the work of Austin. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay.
Barbara?
Hi. So next, please. Andre? Okay. Here we are going to go with the talk about the SHCCs. Our SHCC received revenue from HUD for three different sources of work performed under the contract. that below is the breakdown of this source for 9 months. Keep in mind, we only, for revenue, we only budget for 9 months for the current budget. So the first one is our general fees that we paid by HUD for about $10,310,446. That's about 90% of the total revenue from HUD. That this is for the work that we performed in the area of processing owner housing assistance payment, contract renewals, and the contract rent adjustment, and the responding to the residents' non-life-threatening and the non-life-threatening non-resident calls and concerns. The next one is the management occupancy review fees, MOR fees, that it's about 9.2% of the total revenue, or the amount of $1,060,800. That's based on a 3,400 per MOR that what we completed for the field audit and the inspection for the properties. The next item, the next one is MOR for contingency fees. That is about $101,119. Basically, to repay, reimburse SHCCs up to $500 for the travel expenses. Next slide. This slide we are showing the expenses side for our SHCC program. Other than the staff salary expenses, there are a few items. The one is the office. The SHCC does share the cost that in the format of office rent and utility for the office space they use, that they contribute $216,287. They also contribute the management fee to support the COCC's service provided and the COCC's support. That for the amount of $450,000. The one we already talked about is their contribution donation to Austin Pathway of $4,155,000. And the another item is that we just talked about earlier, that we also increased the budget of in the legal fee expenses of $150,000 for the need for pay for our legal service. Okay, next slide. This slide, it concludes my presentation today. This is just one why I see, like I say, this agency, how can we have a very strong financial position. But a little bit concern that we have is that this is a discussion with Mr. Gerber. So that we all know the contract for the SHCC to renew the contract with HUD, because we already from the SHCC's revenue reserve, we allocate $4.2 million to support the pathway, Austin Pathways activities and programs. We also allocate about $1.8 million from the SHCC's to support the COCC for their service and the support. The other concern is that we all know that the COVID-19, that the COVID's no impact on the HUDCAS. That one major one that is kind of is uncertainty there for the staff, the return, when do we return back to work, office to work. The longer term that we have a little bit concern about our family, our residents. What's the impact, and if they found their unemployment, and they are going to need additional more assistance from HUDCAS. The last one is it's just kind of the housing affordability in Austin. From as a newcomer to the Austin area, I see that because of the housing market, housing prices continue to increase. Definitely have an impact on the housing affordability in the Austin area. So, and another one is the increase in the rent cost is going to have the impact on our ability to provide housing assistance to low-income families, because the higher cost means that less units that we can provide. But pretty much this concludes my presentation today with the fiscal year 2022's budget. Any question, or if you have any questions, any concerns?
Any questions or comments from Barbara? For Barbara?
Yes, one comment.
Barbara, I'd like to. Whoops, go ahead. I'm sorry, Tara, is that you? Yes, ma'am.
Yes, that's me. I think I like the presentation very much, Barbara, and I would like to give copies of the slides that you presented to us today. I think it's a great way of listing the major budget concerns, if that will be possible to provide the board with these.
Sure.
Thank you.
Anything else for Barbara? Barbara, I'd also like to echo Tyra's comments about the presentation. Very clear, very concise. I think we know exactly where our money comes from, how we use it, and like a true CPA, you finish with going concerns. So appreciate that very much. If there are no other questions for Barbara, then I would like to have a motion to approve the operating budget for fiscal year 2021-2022. Do I hear a motion?
I so move.
Okay, Mary made the motion. Tara, you want a second?
Certainly do.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any public comment on this item? Okay, hearing none, then all those in favor of approving the budget for 2021-2022, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, I'd like to just give a shout out. Congratulations, Barbara, on your first HACA budget. Well done. And I'd also like to express my appreciation to Ann Gass, who's done quite a bit of work in this as well, as well as Israel El-Khazin, who is in the finance staff. It was really a great team effort. And as you know, Barbara's been with us for about 8 weeks and really jumped in very, very ably to understand these issues and master them. And so really a great start. Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, team. Thank you.
And Barbara, it's really clear that your previous housing authority experience is being utilized to their fullest extent for HACA and subsidiaries.
Yeah, definitely helped a lot. It does help, definitely.
Okay, then we will move on now to item six, which is the presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding resolution 2702, which is approval of HACA's retirement plan to add an employee loan program. Mr. Gerber, is
Sylvia.
Gloria around, or Sylvia?
No.
To do the
sad to share. I think many folks had heard, but in case you haven't heard, Gloria Morgan's mother passed away yesterday.
Oh.
In our thoughts and prayers. And Sylvia will be presenting on this item.
Okay. Sylvia?
Good afternoon, Commissioners, staff, and guests. Sylvia Blanco, Chief Operating Officer for HACA. Wanted to present this item, Resolution 2702, to offer our staff a first-of-its-kind opportunity to access some of their retirement account funds in the form of a loan program. This is something that we discussed at length to determine if this was a good fit for our organization. Anecdotally, we do know in the past that we have had several employees have to make the difficult decision to actually separate their employment from the organization because of a financial emergency and having to access their retirement account funds to address these emergencies. And so we reflected on that and felt that maybe this would be a good opportunity to afford employees the opportunity to access a limited amount of funds, no more than $50,000, and of course depending on their vesting level, to account for any emergencies or other necessary needs. Maybe it's for college education, for a graduating senior in their home, or for a variety of reasons. And so we did research this. Gloria Morgan did reach out to the Housing Agency Retirement Trust, which is the provider of our retirement plan. And so there is a loan provision that does allow for up to $50,000. And again, borrowing no more than 50% of their vested account balance at any given time. And it does not have to be, of course, $50,000. It could be as little as $1,000 that the loan amount can be. But it can never exceed more than $50,000 at any given time in terms of any active loans. What's also, part of the provisions is in terms of repayment, that would be in the form of payroll deductions. And so that would be something that employees will definitely be advised of in advance. There is also a financial counseling course that is required before accessing the loan amount or the proceeds. And the interest rate on the loan is calculated at New York Prime plus 1%. But the employee would be paying the interest back to their own retirement account. It wouldn't be going to, to HACA or to the administrator. And again, they would be paid back through payroll deductions. There are no penalties for early payoff, but there is a lump sum payment that would be required. Now, if there is a separation, if the employee were to leave HACA, then that balance of the loan would become immediately due and payable. So it would essentially become a penalty, and there would be a Form 1099-R that would be forwarded to the employee, and that taxable information would need to be reported to the Internal Revenue Service. So we again deliberated on this and felt that this would be a good opportunity for employees to access this, again, hopefully on just a very limited reasons or on an emergency basis because there are no other options available to the employee. But it wouldn't require the employee to have to separate their employment from the organization in order to access those funds. And that's where we felt it was a compelling reason to look into this and to offer this as a new option for employees moving forward.
Many retirement programs do have loan provisions. I know when I was a member of both the state program and the federal program, there's a similar loan provision, and I was a little surprised that this one didn't offer it, and it turns out that they did. We just never really opted to participate, and it makes sense to be more conservative in encouraging people to keep their funds in their retirement savings. The great thing about this is, of course, they pay themselves back with interest, which is an important benefit. And then, of course, with the pandemic and economic challenges, we just know that there are people who have really struggled. And we know that there are members of our team who have left our employment to go and withdraw funds only to then wanting to come back, a short while later. But they were trying to get access to dollars to fund a child's education or to fund some emergency expense. And so this makes that possible.
Are there any questions or comments of Sylvia and Mike on this agenda item? Okay, so again, what's being asked of the board today is to approve an amendment to the joinder agreement of the Housing Agency Retirement Trust, HACA's retirement plan, in order to implement an employee loan provision. Do I hear a motion to approve this amendment?
I so move.
Thank you, Mary. Tyra? You second? Thank you. Is there any public comment on this item? Okay, if not, then we'll take a vote. All those in favor, aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Okay, the motion passes.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Then we will move. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I just said thank you, Commissioners.
Oh, okay. I think maybe I do have one question. When can I have a question after we've already voted?
Yes, ma'am, of course.
Okay. When does the payback start?
That's a good question.
I see Sylvia rubbing her chin.
Lon, do you have any idea?
Go ahead, Barb. If you, you know, it's 30 days after the funds have been withdrawn would be the first payment.
I was thinking it would probably be something like that, or maybe there's a way to defer it for 90 days. If
there's,
you know,
there's no deferral. And the other thing, too, is that even if an employee leaves the agency, they still have the ability to keep paying back the loan so it doesn't cause you a taxable event. The only time it's a taxable event is if they stop paying in default. Then it becomes a penalty as an early withdrawal on your retirement account. So if someone moves to another job or if something happens, as long as they have the ability to pay that back to the retirement account, then it stays in good standing with them and they're not charged any kind of penalties.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry I thought about that question after the fact. Okay. Moving on to item 7. Which is the presentation, discussion, and possible action on Resolution 2697. This is authorizing HACA to project-based 100 housing choice vouchers in response to a request for proposal that we issued on December the 23rd, 2020. Lisa?
Good afternoon, Commissioners, staff, and guests. Yes, I'm here to present Resolution number 2697. And just to give you a little history, we did go out for request for a proposal on December 23rd, 2020, and we received a great response. There was a total of 8 proposals submitted. We had a review committee of 3. It was myself, Ann Gass, and Dylan Schubitz, and we reviewed all proposals thoroughly, and the 4 that are before you are the ones that received the top scores. And at this time, and just one more thing is, under the tenant-based voucher program, housing authorities are able to project-base up to 20% of their tenant-based vouchers. Additionally, actually, we can project-base an additional 10% of vouchers, so that'd be a total of 30%. I didn't put that in the resolution, but the additional 10% is if you're providing the vouchers to the homeless or chronically homeless. So, and we also are required to let HUD know if we're going to be project-basing the additional vouchers to make sure that we're not going over the cap. And I did present and sent required information to HUD. And with these additional vouchers and the additional 25 that I'll present in a minute, we'll be at a total of actually 1.6% of the 20% baseline and 2.8% of the 10% baseline. So total of 4.4% of our total allocation. So we're well below the 30%. So I just want to make that clear. So with the ones that we have before you, we're asking for a motion to approve resolution 2697, authorizing HACA to enter into an agreement to enter into a housing assistance payment contract with four properties which best fulfill the requirements of a request for proposals issued on December 23rd, 2020 to provide permanent supportive housing to homeless persons in the city of Austin. For four projects authorized to receive project-based vouchers are Aspero Austin at Rutland, 25 housing choice vouchers, Texas Bungalows Permanent Supportive Housing Conversion, which is Austin Finance Corporation in collaboration with Integral Care, 15 housing choice vouchers, Waterloo Terrace, this is a Foundation Communities property that's already in existence, 15 housing choice vouchers, and Capital Studios, which is the Foundation Communities Properties, which is 10 housing choice vouchers. The details of each of the properties was included as attachment two. I'm welcome to go through if you'd like me to expand on the various properties if you'd like, or I'm also available to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions? Tara?
I noticed that the locations are in the attachment, but I don't have a good sense of where these places are. The first one, Espero Austin, seems to be northeast, close to the soccer stadium, right?
But, yes.
What is their claim to fame, is what I'm asking, in terms of their being able to provide amenities or whatever for the homeless in these various areas? And
okay.
Are they located so that the residents can get to transportation or work or something in a convenient manner? That's my concern.
Sure, yes. All of the recommendations before you are in high opportunity areas. And I can actually pull the document if you'd want me to tell you, but they're all in high opportunity areas. The one for Aspero Austin at Rutland is at 1934 Rutland. The location site is up close to the development of the new Austin Soccer Stadium. It's close to a lot of different activities that are going to be going on there in terms of there'll be plenty of employment opportunities and new market rate developments up there as well. Austin, the bungalows or is a hotel conversion that's located at 13311 Burnett Road. And again, that's an area that is in that North Austin area. Significant number of employers up in that area. And again, a lot of opportunities are all on, they're all on transit, so there's ability to get on public transportation, and that was something that was evaluated with each one of these. The ones that are existing for Foundation Communities, the Capitol Studios is right downtown on East 11th Street, right near the Capitol, right over there by where that, I think there's a the hotel.
Painter.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Right across the
Yeah, that hotel there. And then the other one is up in North Austin, located at 12190 North Mopac. So, again, it's in a high opportunity area close to ACC Northridge Campus, the Domain. So all of them are in really, really great areas. Plenty of public transportation, plenty of amenities on the properties, and then plenty of ability to get connected with, you know, services, jobs, and so forth.
Are we providing, or are these properties providing support services for the homeless?
Yes, that was exactly great question. Okay. But every one of the proposals, one of the key elements was they had to have a description of how they were going to provide support services, and that was one of the scoring criteria. I think there's 20 points for that. And each one of them definitely, with Aspero at Rutland, Caritas is the co-developer, and they have a rich history of providing support services and working to help the homeless. And the
the bungalows, the hotel conversion, the partnership is with Integral Care. And again, they have that definitely great track record and rich amount of resources. We did partner with them for the terrace at Oak Springs previously, that the SRO, and it's been working out really great. And so they're going to be providing the support services in that property. And, of course, Foundation Communities, that's what they do at every single property. And those are set up to be efficiencies. So they're really that's what they're really doing right now already. And the good thing about those, it's going to provide immediate opportunity for chronic homeless, for the ones at Foundation Communities to be able to get into housing. So it'll be sort of, like I said, there's, you know, at both Capitol Studios and Waterloo, there'll be an immediate resource that we'll be able to have people come through coordinated assessment and get into housing. And then the other one, the bungalows, the construction date should start around August 2021 with completion of the 50 units February 2022. So that should come along, you know, pretty quickly, not too far out. And then the Sparrow is a new development. And that one, they're going to, in hopes of getting 9% tax credits. But that one, the financing, everything's in order. The zoning's done. July 21st is when they should be able to get their financing. They should be able to start construction September 22. And then completion for occupancy March 2023. But of all the ones we looked at, that one for new construction was the most ready to go, with a high opportunity area with all the support services necessary to help the homeless be successful once they get into housing and to, have stable housing. So feel really good about all four of the opportunities we're bringing before you. And any other questions, I'm free to answer.
Okay. Well, I'm
any
just
other questions from
the first. We have done this model of going out for RFPs.
No, we've done it before. So, as you may remember, commissioners, we went about 3 years ago, and we were the source of maybe even 4 years ago now, where we project-based 25 vouchers at housing choice vouchers at the terraces at Oak Springs, which is a project of Integral Care, and we also put 25 veterans vouchers there as well. So we are, there's 50 units at that property out there on Oak Springs between BTW and Eastland Plaza. And so we're in every unit helping with the long-term operating subsidy there, which is exciting. We're doing effectively the same thing here at the Aspero project that's going to be done by Caritas. We think that 25 and 25 mix has worked really well for us. And so we're going to be giving them, we're recommending 25 housing choice vouchers. And then you'll see on the next item, we're recommending 25 VASH vouchers to them as well. And so we feel between that and other things that they're working on with the city, that's really the next siting permanent supportive housing project serving our homeless neighbors that we're doing in this community. The biggest issue that we've got in the community as a whole, and it's leading to a conversation that will happen some next week under Mayor Adler's leadership, is around the whole issue of who can provide supportive services. We can project-based and provide some subsidy for housing, but if we don't have the supportive services there to help our homeless neighbors and those who are struggling to be successful, then we know it's not going to work. And so increasing supportive services capacity has really been a significant challenge that several of the homeless services providers have been really working up to. Jo Catherine Quinn, who heads up Caritas, is actually here on the line, and I might ask Jo Catherine to maybe say just a word about, you know, because she's really been the leadership trying to expand capacity in our city, and she's been one of the few CEOs of a homeless serving agency that's really trying to expand capacity given the immense need that we're seeing. And with that expanded capacity, we can match that up with housing choice vouchers and other tools that we have, and we can do something tremendous like we're proposing to do at Sparrow. But there's different pieces of the puzzle that we're all bringing to it, and it's nice to see it coming together at Caritas's project, it's also nice to see it with this hotel strategy that the city is using. That's the Texas Bungalows project, and that Integral Care, which is that earlier project, Terraces at Oak Springs, that they're stepping up to 50 new units at this Texas Bungalows. And then Foundation Communities, of course, has been a long time service provider here, and they've got capacity. So we can easily place 25 vouchers there, and they'll hit the ground running tomorrow. But even there, we're looking for everyone to sort of increase their capacity. But Joe Catherine, do you wanna maybe say a quick word if appropriate, Madam Chair? Morning, Joe.
Hi. Thanks, Mike. I just want to really applaud the Housing Authority of the City of Austin for making these vouchers available and, you know, putting out this RFP specifically for people experiencing homelessness. It's been it's such a an incredible resource for our work. People experiencing homelessness need that runway that a voucher provides once they get into housing, and it just really helps build their well-being and stability in the community. For this particular project, it's extremely helpful because, you know, being able to have 50 of the units with a voucher attached to them really helps the whole property be successful, both from a financial standpoint and from a stability of the clients, of the residents standpoint. And it's just a really important contribution. And at the risk of repeating what Mike said, I know, we all know that making a big difference and ultimately ending homelessness in our community takes everyone. It takes all of our different organizations. It takes all the sectors of the government. It takes our philanthropic community, the corporate community, the business community, everyone, congregations, everyone working together to do this. And this is a really good example of how our community is coming together. And I, again, thank you for making this opportunity available to us.
Thank you, Joe Catherine. Any other questions or comments of Joe Catherine or Lisa or Mike?
No, I would just say that we are anticipating coming back to the board probably in the summertime with another request to project-based, given the limited number of project-based vouchers that we've issued in the past and given the increase of resources that we're anticipating seeing. We'd like to project-based some more to address homelessness in our community. It's really tethered to that increase in supportive services capacity. And I know Joe Catherine will be part of the conversation next week. And I think we're, you know, very much on the same page about really pushing to expand that casework and supportive services component, because it's so vital. But we would ask the board's support. And Lisa, thanks for your hard work, and we would ask approval of resolution number 2697.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa. And what this resolution does is the approval to project-based 100 vouchers to 4 developments around the city that were selected as a result of an RFP process. So do I hear a motion?
I so move.
Thank you, Tyra.
Second.
Mary, thank you. Is there any public comment on this item? If not, then I would ask for a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Motion
Chair,
passes.
I would just note that Jennifer Hick is on the line. Jennifer is one of the savviest tax credit consultants and affordable housing consultants in the country, and grateful for her help in getting this project really off the drawing board and move through the complexities of finance. Joe Catherine, you know, runs complex programs at Caritas, but when you're talking about building a building like this, it really requires bringing in some experts, and it's an expertise that I don't have, and I know that Joe Catherine has learned a ton in the last year, but Jennifer has been a great help to us, and I just wanted to acknowledge that she's on the line today.
Yeah, we couldn't have done it without Jen.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Jennifer, thank you for being with us. Okay, we will move over to agenda item number 8, which is resolution 2698, to enter into an agreement. Is that right? Yes. Yes, I'm sorry, for 25 vouchers to project-based 25 Veterans Affairs Supportive Housing Choice Vouchers, in other words, BASH vouchers, in response again to an RFP that was issued January the 14th, 2021. And Lisa, this is yours also.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. Yes, as you've already described it, we did go out for an RFP on January 14th, 2021. We received 4 proposals for this RFP. All of them, they were required to get a letter of support from the VA indicating that they were supportive of project-basing the vouchers at the particular property. We had the same 3 people scoring the proposals, and Aspero at Rutland was the top score. So at this point, again, we're requesting approval of resolution number 2698, authorizing HACA to enter into agreement to enter into a housing assistance payment contract with Aspero Austin at Rutland to project-based 25 Veteran Affairs Supportive Housing Vouchers. I open it up to any questions.
Any questions or comments for Lisa?
No.
No, Tara, no? Okay.
I'm okay.
All right. Well, hearing none, then I will accept a motion for approval to project basis 25 vouchers.
Okay. I move approval of resolution 02698.
Thank you, Tara.
I second that.
Mary, second. Any public comment on this item? Okay, hearing none, I ask for a vote of approval. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Moving on to item 9 is an update on AAHC's acquisition and development programs. And this is Ron and or Ron and Suzanne.
Correct.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Tara.
For a 5-minute break.
A 5-minute break? Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll take a 5-minute break. It is 1:53, so can we come back at like 2 o'clock?
That sounds good.
Okay. All right. We will resume our meeting of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin, and we are on agenda item number 9, which is an update on AAHC's acquisition and development program.
So, Commissioners, at this point, we're obviously going to turn it over to Suzanne and to Ron, but Suzanne and Ron, are you all going to walk through AAHC, the AAHC PFC, and then our Austin Affordable PFC and South Congress PFC? And cover those items as well in this? Are you going to move through the – will you steer the boat for the rest of this?
However, we can.
Okay, great. Why don't you guys, in consultation with Bill, just steer the rest of this part of the agenda? Take it away, Suzanne.
Okay, so hi, Commissioners. How are you?
Hi, Suzanne. How are you?
Hi, Suzanne.
So what we're doing here today on item 10 and 11, number 10 is for the resolution to amend bylaws for Austin Affordable PFC Incorporated, and then number 11 is to amend bylaws for South Congress Public Facility Corporation. So on these resolutions, we have to get approval from the Housing Authority to amend for the PFCs to amend the bylaws, since the Housing Authority actually created the PFCs. And that's what we're doing under these two amendments. And then after we get your approval to do the amendments, then we'll go over to the actual PFC agendas. and do the resolutions to amend and elect the officers. And on these, we're just doing cleanup corrections on these amendments so that we can add Ron Colwall as an authorized signer. We're adding him an officer position for him so that, you know, with COVID, with us not all being in the office at the same time, Mike is really the only one that can sign on the PFCs right now. So we want to add, amend the bylaws so that Ron can also sign. And that way, you know, when one's out, the other one can sign, and they normally are not out at the same time. And so that's what we're doing on these today.
That makes sense.
And there are on your agenda, there are items 10 and 11 on the Austin Housing Authority agenda.
Yes.
And the first one is to approve the resolution 2699, and this would be to make such actions as necessary to amend the bylaws of Austin Affordable PFC. Are there any questions or comments for Suzanne or Ron on this item?
I will move approval of 02699.
Okay. Thank you, Tyra. Is there a second, Mary?
I second.
Is there any public comment on item number 10? Okay, hearing none, then all those in favor of approving resolution 2699 to amend the bylaws of Austin Affordable PSC, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Item number 11 is resolution 2700. This is to amend the bylaws of the South Congress Public Facility Corporation. Any questions or comments for Suzanne and Ron on that? If not, do I hear a motion to approve the amendment of the bylaws for South Congress EFC, which is resolution 2700?
I so move.
Thank you, Mary. Second, Tyra. Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? I'm sorry, I did forget to ask if there was any public comment on amending South Congress PFC.
Madam Chair, before you vote, I'd like to just ask Bill Walter. Bill, just to verify, there is nothing that the board is approving in this that in any way dilutes the authority of the board or decision-making being made by them. This is just a really administrative benefit allowing another signatory. Is that your legal understanding? And I thought
Bill,
I'd try to talk about that softball. Ron, is that your understanding?
Hello? Hello?
Yep, there you go, Bill.
Yes. Hey, Bill.
Hi. Sorry, I think that's on the other end. Mike, you're exactly right. As Suzanne described, this is, in essence, some housekeeping as the entities have been around a while now. And what we're doing is basically asking for approval to revise the bylaws so that essentially they more closely track the statute and allow the maximum flexibility in who you appoint as the board members. But the board does remain in control of who acts as an officer and what they can do.
Okay. Thank you, Bill.
Okay.
Have we voted on this?
Not yet.
Okay. Then I need a motion to approve amending the bylaws of the South Congress Public Facilities Corporation, which is resolution 2700.
I believe Mary has already moved. And
I was waiting for her. I didn't want to be.
Okay. Tyra? I can't see your hand, Tyra, because I've got a dialog box on my screen that says slow network connection, turn off webcam. So,
I ignored it.
So, Tyra, you made the motion. Is that correct?
Mary made the motion, and I seconded the motion.
Okay. Thank you all very much. Any public comment? If not, do I hear a motion that we approve Resolution 2700 to amend the bylaws of the South Congress PFC? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. Thank you. Okay, moving now to the agenda for the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation.
Madam Chair?
Meeting has yes?
Could we go to South Congress PFC first, and then we can go ahead and approve the amended bylaws and the officers, and then we can close that meeting?
Yes, we can, Suzanne. All right, so moving then to the tab for South Congress PFC. We have opened the meeting. We have certified that we have a quorum. And so the first item will be Mr. Colwell, Suzanne, and Ron on item number two, which is Resolution 0008 to ratify all actions taken by the Board of Directors in 2021.
Don't we have to approve the minutes first?
That would be a good idea. Thank you. So these were the minutes of December 17th, 2020. Tyra, you want to make that motion?
I will certainly do. I so move.
Commissioner, before you make the motion and second, I would suggest that we're, since it's on a consent agenda where we're ratifying as well, you can take the whole consent agenda.
Okay.
Just as we'll be doing this with each of the meetings that we open, it'll include the minutes as well as that clarifying resolution for this past fiscal year.
Okay. So there's two items on the consent agenda. One of them is amending the bylaws, and then the other is appointing and ratifying officers of the PFC. The minutes, December 17th of 2020, and then resolve any irregularities that might have occurred in 2021. So those are the consent items for the South Congress PFC.
I so move. Approval.
Thank you, Tyra.
Second.
Mary seconds. Any discussion? Any public comment? If not, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, thank you all. Now we will move to agenda item number three, which is amending the bylaws for the South Congress PFC. And that is Suzanne.
Thank you. And this is the actual action of amending the bylaws. And as we talked about earlier, it is just kind of some administrative cleanup stuff. It's also so that we can make sure that South Congress PFC and Austin Affordable PFC have the same officers and, you know, they just match.
Any questions for Suzanne?
No.
Okay, hearing none, then I need a motion to approve Resolution 0009, amending the bylaws of PFC, South Congress.
I so move.
Mary, thank you. Is there a second? Tyra? Public comments? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, resolution passes. Number four is appointing and ratifying officers of the South Congress PFC, and this is resolution 00010. Suzanne?
And on this one, we want to keep the same officers that we have with Austin Affordable PFC and Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. So that would be president would be Michael Gerber, vice president would be Ron Kowal, and treasurer would be Barbara Chen.
Any questions? Any questions of Suzanne?
Yes.
Yes, Tyra.
Looking on page 2 of 3 of resolution number 00010, and I am not reading under the list of officers what Suzanne just said.
Oh, yes, that's President Sylvia Blunk.
I see. As Sylvia Blunk.
I'm sorry, I did mix that up. I forgot, Mike has to be secretary. It's Sylvia Blanco as president, I apologize. Ron Kowal as vice president, Barbara Chen as treasurer, and Mike Gerber as secretary. Did I get that right? Okay. I apologize, I didn't pull the resolution up before.
The statute doesn't allow for the president. You can't have the president be the secretary, and obviously Mr. Gerber's president of is appointed by the board under the housing authority, so he has to he can't be president and secretary, so we had to switch that off under the statute on the PFC. So, and Bill can clarify that if you have any questions.
Okay. Tyra, thank you for noting that. Are there any other questions or comments? Okay, so then the resolution is 00010, which is ratifying the officers of the South Commons Facility Corporation, and they are as outlined in the resolution. Sylvia is president, Ron vice president, Barbara treasurer, and then Michael Gerber as secretary. Do I hear a motion?
I so move.
Second?
Second. I second that.
Public comment?
Question.
Question? Yes.
The duration of these terms of office?
Mm-hmm.
They're lifetime appointments, Tyra.
Well, I thought perhaps they might be, but I was, I just couldn't find it anywhere.
I believe that they're until they're substituted out, but we do need to get on a pattern of really re-upping all of our officers with, and so next year we will do another series of elections. For various board slots. And at that same time, we will probably revisit and reaffirm our selections here as well.
Okay. And
I think that's probably a good practice every 2 years to do that.
Is that acceptable to our legal counsel?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, good question. Any more discussion or questions?
Okay.
If not, then do I hear a motion that we approve 00010?
So I've already moved.
You've already moved.
I second.
Mary seconded. Okay. That's when the question came up, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, then that finishes the business of the South Congress PFC. So I think we can close that meeting at 2:16 p.m. Then Suzanne, moving back to
Commissioner, do we need a motion to adjourn the meeting of South Congress PFC?
Do I hear a motion to adjourn the meeting of the South Congress PFC?
I so move we adjourn.
Thank you, Mary. Is there a second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. then the meeting of the South Congress PFC is adjourned. So then we will go back to the meeting of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation.
Actually, I think we're going to go to the Austin Affordable PFC.
PFC.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
And here too, Commissioner, I think we'll do the consent agenda.
So two items on the consent agenda, the minutes, February the 18th, 2021, and then there was also a resolution to resolve any irregularities. Do I hear a motion that we approve the consent agenda for the Austin Affordable PFC?
I so move.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Tyra, as a second. Any public comment? All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you all. Then the first action item, on the Austin Affordable PFC is item number 3, which is discussion of resolution 00083, amending the bylaws for the PFC, the Austin Affordable PFC. Suzanne?
And again, this is the actual amendment of the bylaws that will be approved, and it's just doing some cleanup and so that we can match the South Congress PFC bylaws.
That's right. It's the same conforming change.
Okay. Thank you, Bill. Any other questions or comments?
No, here too, Commissioners. Sylvia will be the president. Ron is vice president. Barbara is treasurer, and I'll remain my role as secretary.
And that is as outlined in – it's not outlined in the resolution, is it?
It is.
That's in the next resolution, I believe.
Yeah, that'll be in item number 4.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You're right.
It's not there.
Sorry, my fault. It's on item 4. I got ahead.
Okay. So what we're voting on right now is just amending the bylaws of the Austin Affordable PFC.
That's correct.
Do I hear a motion?
I so move.
Thank you. Do I hear a second?
We've done that.
Public comment. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. So item number 4 is the appointing and ratifying officers of the Austin Affordable Public Finance Corporation, the PFC. Suzanne?
Yes, and this will be appointing Sylvia Blanco as president, Ron Kowal as vice president, Barbara Chin as treasurer, and Mike Gerber as secretary, the same as we did for South Congress PFC.
Okay. Any questions, comments? All right, hearing none, do I hear a motion that we approve resolution 00084, appointing and ratifying officers of the Austin Affordable PFC?
I so move.
Second?
Second.
Any public comment? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you. We will move on now to item 5, and it's discussion, possible action on resolution 00081, declaring intent to issue bonds and provide for multifamily residential rental development for persons of low and moderate income for property to be named Fox Hollow, describing certain terms and conditions of such bonds, authorizing the filing of an application for allocation of private activity bonds with the Texas Bond Review Board, and containing other provisions relating to the subject. So, Suzanne, looks like you're up on this one also.
Thank you. This one and the next one are two new properties. We're just getting our toe in the water on these. If we decide to go on with them, you'll see them in 2022 at the earliest. We really like these. They're in partnership with LDG, and we would like to start the process of ordering third-party reports and making sure everything is feasible. But we're coming to you today for a resolution to approve so that we can put in a tax credit, I mean, a bond application when we've got all those reports done and we decide to move on. This property is off just east of 35, south of Slaughter Lane and north of Onion Creek Parkway. It's across this 35 from South Park Meadows, which is that big shopping center, very close to the Bridget Asher. I think y'all are familiar with that. We had a board meeting out there. And it's a really it's really good area. The schools are the same as Commons at Goodnight and Moonlight are going to. It's a brand new elementary that's award-winning, Blazier Elementary, Paredes Middle School, and Aikens High School. Again, this is in partnership with LDG Development. It's going to be a family apartment site with, right now we're estimating about 241 family units, and I'm really excited about the unit mix. We've got 1, 2, 3, and 4 bedrooms. So these are really going to help out with the housing choice voucher, larger families that it's so hard to find 3 and 4 bedrooms around the town. And we're going to serve incomes at 50% to 70% area median family income. And I did include a chart so you can kind of see what those incomes are for family size. This is located in the city of Austin limits, and it's on a 26-acre lot. So we're excited about that as well, because for family sites, it's nice to have some green space and have, like, you know, playground areas and picnic areas and things for them. As always, with all of our properties, we are going to accept housing choice vouchers. That is our commitment to the board, and we will continue that. And as, you know, Lisa Garcia just went over, you know, they're going to have more vouchers. So we definitely are excited to have these properties in our pipeline so that we can continue to get more properties out there for the voucher.
Right.
And I would be happy to answer any questions for you.
Yeah. Suzanne, I'm looking for that chart which I had found before and now I can't find.
It's in the PowerPoint. It's at the end of the Austin Affordable Housing agenda.
Yeah. All right. That's where. Let's see. I asked a question about one of those issues. Oh, there I found it. Finally. Okay. All right. So that's Box Hollow. Okay. And with the issue of the number of bedrooms, and then you also did the chart for the income limits and the median income.
Yes.
For the area. Mm-hmm. And that's what I got kind of surprised by, how high that medium income for the area in 2020 was, which is $97,600.
Yeah, that's 100% of the area median income. And that's calculated each year. TDHCA and HUD put that out. Mm-hmm. And it just goes by how the growth in each city. So they put it out for each area that the cities are included in.
That area has seen tremendous growth in terms of people moving there. There's a lot of market rent units that have been built. In fact, some of the acquisitions that you've seen we've tried to buy them to keep them from, to help keep those more affordable. But what we're seeing is because of the close proximity to San Marcos and San Antonio and the increase in job opportunity here, we're seeing a lot of people migrate south. It's still very close to the city and downtown. Mm-hmm. And we've really seen a pretty big growth spurt in terms of income levels that are servicing those apartments.
And I was wondering, because this is really not the area where most of the high-tech firms are moving south. Most of them are moving north, right? So that can't account for that. I'm just trying to figure out what the variables are. So most of it's really university being there, Texas State, and the nearness to San Antonio, I guess.
Well, the area median income chart is calculated by TDHCA. And it's basically calculated for the whole area of, like, Austin, Round Rock, Georgetown, all of that area. So it takes into account all of those areas. And even though at the top it says 97,600, that's for 100% of the area median income. If you go down, we are doing 50% to 70%, or we're making the units affordable to people that earn 50 to 70% area median income. So for a family of four at 50% area median income, that's $48,800.
Okay.
And then 60 is $58,560, and then 70% area median income is $68,320. So we're trying to get below what they're saying, you know, the 100% is.
Right.
And try to get, you know, more affordable for, you know, like we said, it's right across from South Park Meadows. So you've got a lot of retail workers, that don't make that much.
Right. Okay, that's what's my concern. But I love to see these numbers. Not that I love to see them, because I think it's a serious issue of affordability, but
Austin.
know what we're up against, you know?
Yes.
It's a serious challenge.
It is. It's very serious.
Okay. And then, so we think that if we get everything in, all of our ducks in a row, and we get the bond issuance and things of that sort, we might have this development on its way in 2022?
Yes, we'll more than likely come back to you to get approval to move forward with the closing in 2022. We're trying to get our pipeline to where we've got, you know, some in line for this year, and then we're always working on the future so that we have some in our pipeline to continue the affordability, because, you know, it's only going to get worse. Right. And we need to continue to build these projects. And so with the timing of the bond money and the timing of applying for tax credits, and also we still have a long way to go on these. We've got to make sure that, you know, the environmental reports come back okay, and we're able to build the number of units that we want to build and everything. So we've got some work, and we just wanted this is just, like I said, the starter resolutions to get our toe in the water, but definitely you're not going to see them until 2022 again. But we'll have more concrete everything at that time.
And this area is totally undeveloped, correct?
There's nothing on the lot the 26 acres. There's
right. Okay. I think that was my questions about that.
Any other questions or comments? I think the chart that you all are doing is really very helpful. You can see if we approve these two future acquisitions, they're yellow, and they're some of the southernmost developments we will have. And I think the thing that's so illustrative about this chart is that we're north, south, east, and west.
Right.
So we're really doing a very good, being very strategic about trying to be in as many places around the city of Austin and the ETJ as we can.
And this...
Okay, anything... I'm sorry, Tyra, was that you?
I was just saying, just to follow up on what your point is, and we've done this actually within the last 3 years, getting this geographical, what's the word I want to use? Equity? I don't know.
Disbursement?
I look at it as a geographical disbursement of affordable housing across the entire quadrant.
Yeah, I like that word, disbursement. That's good.
Yeah, I think with Ron going gangbusters on purchasing already built properties, that's, you know, that's really filled things in, and then it allows me enough time to, you know, it takes me 2 years to get a project built once we close on it. So I think the two of us really complement our portfolio. We're able to really move. But yes, it really is filling in everything. We were just talking to Ken about the map, and it's getting full. We may have to go to two pages.
Yeah, I noticed that myself, or to a much smaller font that none of us could read.
Any more questions or comments for Suzanne or Ron on item number 3, which is resolution 00177? If not, do I hear a motion to approve executing any and all documents? Is that right?
I move approval.
Tyra, you approve? You move approval. Mary?
Second.
Okay. Any public comment? Okay, hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? So the next item is item number 4, which is resolution 00178. Again, authorizing AAHC to execute any all documents, take any actions necessary to participate in the housing tax credit application for the Clovis at McKinney Falls. Suzanne?
This property is south, almost directly south of our Ben White projects, quite a way down. It's across the street from McKinney Falls State Park. Around this area, you have a ton of single family residences, and they're very, very nice. And I know that they're very pricey out there. So we're really excited to have this opportunity to build a multifamily apartment complex and to get those people that are renting out there. It's very beautiful out there. This is also a partnership with LDG, and it's going to be a family project with what we're estimating 264 units. This one also has 1, 2, 3, and 4 bedroom units, and I'm really excited about the mix. There's quite a few 3 bedrooms that we desperately need in this city. On this one, we're going to serve tenants at 60% AMI, area median family income, and below. It is located in the ETJ, so it's just right outside the city limits, and it's 15 acres. It is in the Del Valle School District. The schools are Collins Elementary, Ojeda Middle School, I think is how you pronounce it, and then Del Valle High School. We will... obviously, as we've committed, open this up to Housing Choice Voucher tenants as well. I think this will be a great project. We don't have that many with 3 and 4 bedrooms down south, so I think this will be a really good addition to our portfolio.
Any questions or comments?
Have we had political difficulty in the past? Because you said that this is an area that is really single residence and pricey at that. Are they going to raise a stink about trying for us coming in and doing rental apartments, not even condos, but rentals?
I don't think so. I think this tract of land is far enough away from them. It's not, you know, right in their backyard. I think it's far enough away, and there's enough open land around there that we'll be okay. We're also, that's part of the process between now and us actually deciding whether to go forward or not, is our developer partners will meet with any homeowners associations that are around there, make sure that they know what's going to go up, and make sure that they don't have any concerns. And if they do, we definitely will address them before we go any farther.
Okay. Any other questions or comments from the commissioners or from staff? If not, then do I hear a motion to approve resolution 00178?
I so move.
Thank you. That was Mary. And then second, Tyra?
Yes.
Thank you. Any public comment? If not, shall we vote on the approval of resolution 00178? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Thank you. The resolution passes. That, I believe, does that finish the business of the PFC, or we still have one more item? I'm sorry, on Austin Affordable, which is item number 5.
Right.
Is that correct, Suzanne?
We're doing Austin Affordable right now. Is that correct?
We're doing the Austin Affordable PFC right now.
Okay.
So we actually were approving resolution 00082.
Eight, one, and 18 were items 5 and 6.
Yeah, and that would be the last item for the PFC.
So it's resolution 00. It's item number 6. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. Yes. 0082.
On the PFC, on the Austin Affordable PFC.
Correct.
Okay. And that is the issuance of bonds to prescribe certain terms and conditions authorizing the filing of an application for an allocation of private activity bonds with Texas Bond Review Board. 00082. And Suzanne, you're on this one also.
That was actually the one I just went over. So I think we just need to take a vote on this one.
I think what happened, okay. Commissioner, is you were reading resolutions on Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, but we were discussing Austin Affordable PFC. So the resolution numbers were different than what you were reading. So I think we need 0081 was already approved, and 0082 was already approved, but we called it 00178. So it's just the number was, you were referring to the Housing Authority agenda, I believe.
Because
okay. So it's 00082. Is that correct?
Correct.
And that is the Austin Affordable PFC.
Mm-hmm.
And it's declaring intent to issue bonds and to provide for financing for the Clovis at McKinney Falls.
Correct.
That's correct.
And I
move approval of
0082. Okay. Thank you, Tyra. Mary, on a second, any public comment? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Okay.
We're excited about both of these projects, and I would ask Mr. Kowal, we need to work with Mr. Nemiroff associated with our performance review of LDG, as we discussed, so we can provide that information to the board prior to bringing these transactions forward.
Yes, I agree.
I don't believe there's any other items come before Austin Affordable Density.
Okay, then do I hear a motion that we approve closing the meeting for the Austin Affordable Public Finance Corporation?
I so move.
Thank you, Mary. Tyra, second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
We're closed at 2:42.
2:42 p.m.
Yes, ma'am. Now going back to the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation agenda.
Okay.
Austin.
That is item number five. Number five, and this is the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation's agenda, so tab back to the left. And this is to do a refinancing at 00181. And it's a refinancing of the Point at Ben White, which is a transaction that was actually our first development with LDG, and I think it was 2014, I think, we started that development. So what this resolution is asking for is to facilitate the refinancing, cause AAHC's wholly owned subsidiary to execute an amendment to the amended and restated partnership agreement, cause the partnership to enter into financing for the project, cause AAHC and the general partner and or the partnership to execute any and all documents that as necessary to consummate the transaction. Suzanne?
Yes, this is this was our very first property to do 4% tax credits and bonds to actually build and to partner with LDG, and we haven't stopped since. we're really excited about this property leased up within 30 days of completion. It's held very steady at a mid to high 90% occupancy level. This is in the Del Valle School District, when we closed this loan, we locked the interest rate at 3.99%. With the low interest rate environment, we're looking at an estimated between 2.4 and 2.6% interest. We're waiting for the approval so that we can get that interest rate locked either today or tomorrow. The property upon completion was at a value of $35 million. Now the value has gone up to $48 million. So we feel that the combination of the low interest rate environment plus the increase in the value, we're able to go ahead and refinance this and take some cash out. So what we want to do with the cash that we're taking out, we'll pay off the loan. We will do some repairs because it's about 6 years old. The lender is requiring that we put in escrow or in a reserve account 9 months of the mortgage payment, but they're only going to make us hold that for 6 months just to make sure that everything goes according to the way it has been. Then they'll release that money to us. We also have the normal replacement reserves and the operating deficit reserves to back us up. We also want to do like what Ron does with his acquisitions, and we want to put $1 million into a reserve account for us as owners so that for future capital expenditures or needs, like if the roofs need replaced or something, instead of having to deplete our replacement reserves, we want to have that extra cash so that, you know, we know that any repairs that may come up, we're okay to do, and it's not going to affect the operation of the apartment. And then also, we want to pull some cash out. And so because Austin Affordable is partners with LDG, we get 51% of all the cash flow or the cash that comes out, and LDG gets 49%. So with this refinance, that would give us each a little over $2 million. We want to put it in an account with the idea that in the future, we could go and do more deals with LDG, that we could do more deals with LDG that maybe aren't tax credit deals. Kind of like the Moonlight deal we did and the Oaks that is the third phase of Ben White. And that way we don't have to bring in a third investor. So everything that we have just gets split between LDG and Austin Affordable. So that's kind of the reason we want to do this refinance, and we're really excited about it. I think it's a really good deal. The lender and the investor have already approved it with, you know, green lights to go. So they're ready to go if we are. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. Yeah.
Questions, comments for Suzanne? Well, a couple of comments I might make, Suzanne, is you talk about taking cash out and you talked about more transactions with LDG. I mean, there's no restriction on how we use that cash, I believe. Maybe I should ask that question. So if there's another developer that we wanted to do business with, or developers, we could use that cash to do business with those developers. Correct?
Yes, that is correct. That is correct.
And then the other really good reason to do it is it makes it more stable financially. It just makes a much more stable financial property when you can reduce your interest rate by 1.5% and lower your debt service. So I think there's a number of really good reasons why we want to do why we'd want to do this transaction.
And
go ahead.
We're now done with LDG.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part of that, Tyra.
How many deals have we done now with LDG? I know.
So, Commissioner, the front of your book, you'll see a chart. Yep. And if you look there, but I want to say it's we have 6 deals that are currently up and operating, and then we have another 6 that are in various phases of development coming online. Is that accurate, Ron?
Okay.
I would say though that at the request of the board, we did ask our outside audit firm to do a review and analysis of their wherewithal, and we got initial information back, but we'll be providing information to the board. But based on their extensive reviews and consultation with Commissioner Carrington, who knows a little bit about the compliance part of real estate, they did a pretty thorough review, and they came out with very high scores or clearances on that everything we asked. We felt very, very confident in their wherewithal. It was a good analysis. So we're waiting for the final. That's what I was asking, Ron. Before we ask you to vote on anything else, that's executing a contract with them. We're gonna want you to see the deeper dive we did.
When do we think that we will have that from Berman Hopkins?
I think a matter of weeks. Okay. Yeah, I think certainly before the next board meeting. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I feel comfortable. The company, I feel comfortable with their philosophy, etc. I just don't know at what point we're okay and what point we aren't.
I think it's important to remember that each one of these deals represents a separate partnership that we've entered into. And while they've taken off the risks by providing the guarantees, which is appropriate, you know, one of the things that's so nice about the structure is that, you know, and you're seeing the fruits of it finally here. You know, this property, you know, Point at Ben White, has you know, increased in value tremendously. And so we're able to see a significant benefit in a variety of different ways that Mr. Carrington talked about, and that our agency is going to gain from the ability to take a couple $1 million out and then to use that effectively with the board's concurrence. The next big property where we can go and don't have to go out and get an equity partner, we can be the equity partner and get the bigger returns on it, which means more cash flow for our agency, which means more cash flow that we can sustain the Austin Pathways, you know, work. And so that's kind of the game. And ultimately, we may want to be in a position where we go into being the role of developer. You know, our friends at Carlton, you know, in other deals, you know, they have served as, you know, a builder, you know, and not served as the developer. And that's okay. You can make a lot, you take the risk, but you also receive the reward from that risk. We're achieving a size that is increasingly pointing to, you know, doing more with the wherewithal that we have. And so one of the things that we have in our strategic plan, and we've been a little sidelined because of the pandemic, has been, you know, we need to think about, you know, where do we want to be when we're fully grown up? We're kind of like a teenager, if you will, in the development realm, but as a full on grown up, I've got two teenagers home, so I'm very mind sensitive about teenagers. But when we're fully, when we're fully, grown up as an entity, do we want to be able to have an even expanded range, be able to do it all, and have the capacity to develop those deals and realize those returns ourselves, which means, you know, expanding AAHC in some different ways. So that's a big strategic discussion that is gonna happen. It hasn't happened in the last 6 months, but it's gonna happen over the next couple of years, and we'll be thinking about, you know, that and bring some recommendations back to the board.
Well, okay. I guess what I'm trying to figure out, I don't even know where we stand in relation to other big agencies now and the size of our portfolio in comparison with I don't even know who to compare with. I don't think we can compare ourselves with Los Angeles or Chicago, but where do we start comparing ourselves? And what models are they using? I want us to be successful. I want us to present to our communities as many options as we can for affordable housing. I just want us to make sure that we're not getting near a cliff somewhere.
I very much respect that, Commissioner, and I think we always say it's hard to compare ourselves to others, and it is. I'll send you all an article that was in yesterday's New York Times. Several real estate groups, you know, doing a national analysis, determined that Austin is, despite the pandemic and the economic downturn, the hottest market in the country and continues to be, and sees really different growth. And of course, we're serving folks at that lowest income level. So the number of folks, even if you've got some saturation and things level off in the higher end of the market, at the lower end of the market, you know, there's still demand, and by some estimates, because of the influx of people into the city, you know, 3 years ago when we were talking about the need to build 100,000 units, and there was a sense that we were going to try to be, we were making some real dents in it, a lot of people think we've just almost maybe done nothing and maybe even gone backwards by not doing enough. Mm-hmm. So it's a weird market, and it's with things that are unexplainable. Or they're explainable, but they're just not typical in what you'd see in a real estate market. They're just, things are defying kind of the usual because of everything's just up, up, up. And no one seems to lose money, you know, in real estate in Austin. We know that eventually somebody will, and we don't want that to be us. So we're very conservative, very protective, and it certainly affects our thinking. But I think right now, I look at, others were coming from a different starting place. So, for example, in Washington, D.C., where Barbara is, I mean, they've got, 60 public housing properties. When you talk about San Antonio's Housing Authority, they have 6,000 public housing units, and they're just starting now their conversion to RAD. But then they also do affordable housing, and they have, an expanded number of affordable housing properties that, would exceed ours. So, and we're about the same size as a metropolitan area as, as San Antonio. Still not quite as many within the city limits, but, when you count the ETJ and, Round Rock to San Marcos, we certainly are very competitive, and I think have, a lot of advantages. So it's hard to judge it, but I think that you're asking the right questions. But I think we will feel and see some things that tell us tap the brakes, slow down, stop. And we are cautious. I mean, Ron and I, in the last couple of months, we've turned down several PFC deals pending action by the legislature. There have been just people we haven't wanted to do business with. Something doesn't look right, something doesn't sound right, something seems funky. Somebody comes in initially to, I think you're on mute, Tyra.
Some don't smell right.
Yeah, right. Some don't smell right, but we're even more picky. I mean, somebody just does anything, and Ron and Suzanne are just, we're pretty tough of, is this somebody we want to be effectively married to for the next, 20 years? And if we can't answer that question and it doesn't feel right, all three of us have really good guts. And every once in a while, if we still don't feel right, then we go and we turn to Commissioner Carrington and we just don't give her the person, but we sort of give her a fact pattern and say, does this, from your experience, does this sit right? Or we go to Carl, and Carl's instincts are really all of your instincts are great on this stuff. So I wish I had some sort of data-driven or theoretical overlay to it. We have a philosophy of development. We want to build the best, lowest-income housing we can with as many services as we can, as close into the city as we can, and to use that to support our work at Austin Pathways and for our truly lowest-income residents. But beyond that, we've been broad and it's benefited us, tremendously. But your words of caution are really important.
Well, and I'm not trying to play the role of Chuck because he's not here today. I could never quite really accomplish that. However, I just kind of want to get a sense of where we are with all these companies, because I feel like just taking this one example, the fact that we are the one example with the point that we have increased so much in value with this property, is significant. And the fact that we're going to come out and we're going to both end up with $2 million in assets is significant. But is this going to be true with all of the rest of our properties? The interest rates, are we still going to be going down? And what happens when the interest rates go up? And I just don't know. And I don't know how you can present this to me to make me understand. If you can make me understand, where is it good and where is the green light going and where is the yellow light? Forget the red light. Just is there a yellow light in sight on the horizon at all?
There is. It's it could come in the form, we're seeing dips in tax credit pricing. We're seeing, at some point, somebody somewhere is going to say, you all are borrowing too much. You know, other outside, you know, other, not us, but the ability to finance and to take on debt. Some, you know, if, you know, I think that's a real question happening at the national level in the extreme of, you know, $1.9 trillion. And now we're going to talk about a $3 trillion infrastructure package and sort of how much debt can a economic system sustain.
Exactly.
And it happens because we're at the top of the food chain, you know, in world financial circles. But in a micro level, you know, I think it's not dissimilar to probably some of the decisions and calls you probably had to make, and you can say it's out of bounds and we can change subjects, but think about some of the things that have, the growth you saw at Austin Community College. As you think about some of the factors, you know, is there a student body nearby that's going to take advantage of this campus if we build it? If we build it, will they come? You know, that's sort of we do a market survey before we build anything, looking at that same kind of catchment area. Is there, if we build it, will they come? We also say, you know, if we build, you know, the Austin, you know, you would ask, do you build, how close are we to the next nearest campus that does similar things or dissimilar things? And we would, we do the same kind of thing. How close are we to other properties? In some cases, we get efficiencies by being in close proximity. In some cases, if we're offering similar products, we don't want to be too close. So we're having to gauge it that way as well. And then lastly, I would say, you know, we have to look sort of at our overall wherewithal to pull it off. You know, who's going to lend you the money? Can you make the case to voters? Can you make the case to, you know, to the public? And in our case, it's the same kind of thing. It's not voters, but, you know, but in effect, you know, bankers, lenders, and others are making are voting with their choice of where to put capital, and they're making their decision. And then also they're, based on their analysis, just as a voter would on bonds. And then, you know, you're looking at sort of agency wherewithal and, you know, ACC wherewithal. So it's not, in my mind, I see it as, you know, you have different terms, but you're still making some same fundamental choices in real estate that are kind of, you know, that are, you know,
I agree with you. And I'm just simply voicing a concern because I don't have any kind of picture that I feel comfortable with. It's very hazy. You know, the black ball that one looks at to make decisions. That black ball that I'm looking at is very hazy. It doesn't have the answer.
So going back to the ACC,
I feel comfortable with what we're doing and what we have done. I just don't know if there's some method in which one can determine the speed, the direction, the magnitude. I don't know.
And maybe, I think that's fair.
And maybe there's no answer to any of those questions, and maybe I'm, other than Chuck, may have only one who have concerns about this. And I've got to stop picking on Chuck. That's not fair. But I do have concerns, but I suspect that mine are different, and I guess I kind of want to see how these things line up against each other, looking at our various partners and knowing that we are going out and looking at other partners and knowing actually they're coming to us more than are seeking them because of our success rate, which makes us, you know, a real asset to some of these people. So, you know, it's just something that we need to be careful about, I guess.
Absolutely. I was going to say, you're going, two things, last things, and then we can wrap this up or whatever you all would like to do. One is that, you know, going back to the ACC example, I would say that, you know, if we saw ACC enrollment going down or stopping construction, that would tell us something about the market as well and what's happening here in our community. So that's why one of the things I value so much about the ACC partnership and our work with them is that we see, you know, where their program's developing and evolving. And, you know, that does factor into some of, you know, how we think about, we look at what others are doing and are they doing it safely? Are they able to, you know, ACC is just one, but are they able to be effective in the development of new real estate in this market? The second thing that, so it's, and there are others that would consider to be kind of bellwethers of where we might want to be or not, or where we hope to avoid. The other thing I would say is that we probably need to, and we talked about this, Ron, you know, some years ago we brought in, Mandy DeMayo came in, and we've had other, folks who've come in to just give an overview of the Austin real estate market, just to talk about it. And to, so maybe we should think about, you know, we engage a number of professionals, you know, maybe Charles Honsath, maybe Mandy, you know, in her role now at the city, you know, maybe, Emily Blair at the Apartment Association, or Emily Chenevier at the Board of Realtors, you know, maybe a couple of Francie Ferguson, you know, who's seen a lot around the country, maybe seeing if, you know, we can get some of them in to, you know, to do a 1-hour panel, just as by way of education, about this market and what they're seeing, and same kind of basic questions that, you know, that Barbara asked, you know, what are you seeing coming in? What are you seeing going out? And what are the big risks and concerns?
Mm.
You know, who's coming in? Who's leaving the market? And what are the big concerns and issues?
And I don't think we can have this discussion at all without really having serious discussions about infrastructure, because transportation and work and tying those two things together is really significant. And it so affects affordable housing and people being forced out of the market in our urban centers. So,
agreed. But I don't think we should wait for them.
Which is why I'm happy to see us move in these geographical areas where we haven't been before.
Right.
But the only question we always have to ask is there affordable transportation to get these people to jobs in the center, if that's where their jobs are, if they're in service industries? So I apologize, and I'm going to blame it on the shot. And if you stop giving me, I wouldn't be talking like this, and I would be probably for a seatbelt.
No, I think you're fine, but I don't think we should. I think we want to, you know, if for at a project like the Point at Ben White,
mm-hmm.
you know, if the transportation folks hadn't come along, you know, if you know they came along after the fact, even the sewer line came along after the fact. You know, we had to go in and do some stuff there, but the fact that we found a great spot, you know, together with our partners, and we dragged a bunch of other folks to do the right thing with schools and with, you know, we could see it starting to come, but we got there first and we really transitioned. I mean, that area has become so vibrant, you know, in recent years, so much so that, you know, TxDOT's got, you know, a humongous project out there. There's incredible array of jobs. Tesla's going. And, you know, it's the Haka property closest to Tesla, arguably. I'm just saying that I don't think we should shy away from going to places just because certain folks come on and say, well, there's not transportation there yet. Because I think it'll drag Cap Metro and others along. And sometimes those other agencies, just like sometimes we do, you know, need a little dragging along. And I think that's okay.
Yeah. And I know I have been in situations where that has definitely occurred.
Oh, yeah, I bet. ACC.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I shut up now.
Any more thoughts, discussion? You hope not. Suzanne? Okay. If not, then this is resolution 00181. And basically it's to facilitate the refinancing of the point at Ben White, cause AAHC's wholly owned subsidiary to execute the amendment and amended and restated partnership agreement, cause the partnership to enter into financing for the project, and cause AAHC and or the general partners to execute any and all documentation necessary to consummate the transaction.
I move.
So with that, okay, thank you, Tyra.
Second.
Thank you, Mary. Any public comment on this item? If not, then all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? I believe that that concludes the business for the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. Is that correct, Mr. Gerber?
I believe that's correct. Suzanne, is that correct? Everything covered? Sorry, you're on.
Sorry, I don't remember us doing the items on this approving consent and doing the two tax credit resolutions. Does Nydia have
did we not
votes
do that?
On this?
So there was some confusion, and I apologize because I lost track too. When Commissioner Carrington was on the PFC agenda, she
Nydia,
was.
Nydia's trying to. Yeah,
I don't have those either. I don't have those either. Okay. I thought that I had.
Okay. Nydia says we don't have it either. Okay.
I think we need to go. Yeah, because it's confusing because I have two resolutions for each of the new properties, one for the PFC and one for Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. So I think that's kind of where. We were kind of doing the PFCs first, and we got a little confused.
Sort of confused.
No problem. So let's try to wrap this up if we can, and go to the consent agenda, which is items 1 and 2, just as we have. Take
on Austin Affordable Housing Corporation.
It's item for 2. I know for sure.
I'm sorry.
I said I know that we have done the consent items for 2 of 3.
Right. For Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, we haven't done the consent, but we did start at item 3.
Okay. So we still need to do the consent, which is approve the minutes of February the 18th of 2021 and the resolution to approve all actions that have previously been taken.
Yes.
So do I hear a motion that we, on the consent items, we approve both of these consent items?
I so move.
Thank you, Mary. Second, Tyra?
Yes.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, any opposed? Okay, and so the resolutions for 3 and 4, which 3 would be Fox Hollow, and 4 would be Clovis at McKinney Falls. Is that correct, Suzanne? Those are the two that you do not believe we've done. And Nydia, you agree with that?
I have those.
Oh, you do have them. Okay. Yes. That was my mistake then. Then I guess we're done.
Who voted, who made the motion, Nydia?
For item number 3, Fox Hollow was Tyra, then Mary.
Uh-huh.
And then for item number 4 was Mary, then Tyra.
Okay, great. And then on item 5, it's Duncan Hall, Apostolo.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I think we're done. So
except for the consent items, but now we've approved those consent items. So we will – do I hear a motion then that we close the annual meeting of the Austin Affordable Housing Finance Corporation?
I have one question, one clarification. On the AAPFC – to go back, now I was out, is 00081, was that voted on?
Yes.
Okay, and do you have that? Because I had walked out to do something for Mike and I.
Yeah, I had Duncan Hall and then Apostolo.
On 00081?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Thank you.
I thought we had done those. What about 00082?
On 00082, I had Duncan Hall.
Yeah, I have all of that. I had walked out to do that errand for Mike and just needed it.
I'll blame it on him.
Okay.
Oh, we were done. Okay. So do I hear a motion that we close the meeting of the annual meeting of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation?
I so move.
Second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Then we go back to the agenda of the Austin of the
okay.
of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin.
Yes, ma'am.
And there are no more agenda items listed.
That's correct.
For HACA.
I just have a couple of items under the president's report that I wanted to share with you, and then okay. Sylvia, if she has anything she'd like to add. And then we'll wrap up by showing you the 2-minute video that we did.
Okay.
So just a couple things I wanted to share because it's been a pretty thorough meeting. One is that we are encouraging strongly our residents to get vaccinated. And you heard about our efforts at the properties. We are encouraging our staff to get vaccinated, and we made a unilateral decision with the approval of our board chair that I want to make you all aware of. He's authorized us to go ahead and provide an incentive of $500. Per team member once they receive both vaccinations. So bringing in their vaccination card, several companies, many progressive companies around the country now are offering an incentive to team members, and the sooner we get back to work, the sooner we gain good stead. So we are offering a $500 benefit to our team members. Bring in your CDC card with evidence of vaccination, and so that'll run through now through July 4th. So our hope is that we will begin to get team members back into the office in some reduced way by June 1st. We've indicated to staff that
you're talking about all of our HOP employees.
I'm sorry, ma'am?
All of our HACA employees, you're saying, are the team members.
What's the definition of team members?
Yes, all of our.
Is that the question?
Yes, HACA employees or team members. I'm sorry, I call them team members. So, but yes, our HACA employees. So it's important to note that our employees, our team members who are at the properties, our maintenance team, our property management team, those folks are still, have been there all throughout this process. So it's really the folks here at the central office that we're talking about in assisted housing, FHCC, the central office, and Austin Affordable has been here every day since the thing started. So we're looking to bring back as many as 25% of staff members by June 1st. So we're going to look at that, and you all know the spacing challenges we have, so we want to do appropriate social distancing and masks, and we'll follow the best guidance of the CDC, but just so you know what we're working towards, we do want to get people back in the office. We think it's important. Although we will come to you all with some ideas about flex time and giving people the ability. Clearly we've shown we can work outside of the office.
Yeah.
So, do we have the ability now for people to work, 2 days in the office, 3 days out of the office, or what's that look like? We don't envision probably many positions being just entirely working from home. But there may be some. So we're going to work through that through our agency continuity team or ACT that will pick up and be working on that challenge. So I want to make folks aware of that. Beyond that, those are really the things I wanted to highlight. It's been a tough month, but it's been a rewarding month. It's been nice to be able to go out and, the one good thing about the winter storm was suddenly we were back together with our residents and back, the pandemic took a back seat to, the things that, make us human, which is good. Sylvia, anything you want to share? And then we'll do the video.
Yes, commissioners, I did want to share with you just a quick update on our efforts at Rosewood Courts. As we, we did submit the tax credit application earlier this month. And so, we look forward to a successful tax credit award in July. But also, we are continuing to work with our residents in just sort of getting their feedback on finish options inside the units in terms of, you know, kitchen cabinet colors and countertop colors, the fun stuff. But another part that we're working on as well with our PR team is gathering feedback from the community on what type of programming that they would like to see at the green space that we are planning to create at Rosewood. That would be, again, in sort of in commemoration of the original Emancipation Park space. So we are scheduling several community meetings to gather that feedback, not only from our Rosewood residents, but just from the general East Austin community. So just wanted to let you know that the first one is scheduled for April 13th. It is an evening virtual meeting, so it's at 6:30 p.m. And so I will, if you would like to extend the invitation to you all. And if you can join us and just, you know, learn a little bit more about the project and also help us to kind of gather some ideas on some of the uses of the green space and also a proposed visitor center. Basically, how do we want to tell the story of the rich history of Rosewood Courts and Emancipation Park? So just wanted to let you all know about that. It's going to be a series of three community meetings. Again, the first one kicking off April 13th and the second one on May the 1st. The June date is to be determined, but we will get that one finalized here in the very near future. So just wanted to give you a quick update on Rosewood.
Okay. And with that, yes, ma'am.
Just two little things. I'd like to congratulate the now CEO, Adrian Todman. She is now HUD's deputy secretary. And our own Lupe Garcia from Santa Rita. She's president of the citywide now. So congratulations to those two.
We're very excited. It's President Biden's nomination of Adrian is great. She's been a friend of HACA for a long time and knows our agency, has been at our properties. Has even done some volunteer work at our properties when they had a day of service here. So she knows us. We've extended the invitation to her. We would love, if appropriate, for this to be the city where she makes her first official visit as deputy secretary. Yeah. So there's a standing invitation. I'm sure we won't get it.
Okay, well, just so that it was her name was mentioned here at our.
I will definitely tell her. I will definitely tell her. Thanks for mentioning that. We're very excited. Bad day for Nara, but a good day for the country.
All right, we ready, Mike?
Yeah, we're ready. I think. Go ahead.
All right.
Is Tyra still now?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, right.
Here.
Oh, great.
Go on.
It's about 2.5 minutes.
Okay.
job.
Ken Bodden did a great job putting it together. Patrick and the Pathways team did the incredible job of coordinating it all. So thanks to everybody for just amazing work.
Well, we just need to adjourn and the time.
If there are no other questions or comments, then I will adjourn the annual board meeting of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin. Do I hear a motion?
I so move.
Thank you. Do I hear a second? Gary, thank you. Any other comments? If not, we will meet. Let's vote for adjournment. Everybody in favor?
Aye.
Okay. And the meeting is adjourned at 3:28 on March the 25th.